Welcome, everyone, to the Shotcast, episode 212. That's right, episode 212, not just the boiling point of water anymore. Also this episode. I am your perpetual host, Bo Ransdell. With me, as usual, is one John C. Dolan.
Hola.
I don't know if that's correct, but...
It is. You say that every time.
I
tell you, and then you're like, oh my god, I'm a genius. And I'm like, no, because I keep telling you every time.
Yeah. I've had a traumatic brain injury for some time now. And
I mean, I don't expect you to keep track of minute details about my life like that. But, if you don't want me to tell you next time that, yeah, I told you that last time, and you want to be nicely surprised every time you get it right, I can do that too. I mean, I'll play that game.
All right. Yeah, it's...
Whatever.
It's just the tacit agreement of our relationship is that I'm going to forget your middle initial, and then you're going to pretend like you've never told me.
Yeah, okay. I'm fine with that. Or maybe I'll just, no, it's not C. It's actually Z. John Z.
You know, I actually knew a guy who, it was my best friend's dad when I was going to school. His first initial was Z. He went by Z. Vernon was his middle name. His first name was Zirkle. No shit.
That's special.
Yeah. Z-I-R-K-L-E. Don't know where it came from.
Never heard of that one before.
Yeah. I think it was from the planet Metatron.
Stefan Zirkel.
Yes. Cubic Zirkelnium. That cackling you hear is one Justin McFerrin.
Buenas noches.
Yes.
One up in me.
Yeah.
A dick.
And David J. Anders, once again on assignment in the Himalayas, can't keep him away.
Yeah, I mean, once you get a taste of that sweet tammy robo flesh, man.
Chilled to perfection.
Oh, man. Something, I mean, normally you don't want it cold, but tammy.
Tammy.
Something's better. Better when she's icy.
You know, I wonder if, much like the USS Enterprise... that it just goes like Tammy A, Tammy B, Tammy C.
Did you hear Justin perk up there at even just a small mention of Star Trek?
Yeah, as soon as I said
what?
Star Trek.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Huh? Nerd.
You're outed as a fan, sir.
Yeah.
I watch Star Trek every day. Oh, God.
I think I've told the story about me going to a Star Trek convention on this show, have I not?
No.
I haven't heard it.
I've never heard that story.
All right, so I'll tell it very briefly, because I know I've told it on one podcast or another in the past, but essentially when I was kind of mid-ish 20s, I was bartending with a guy who was a giant Star Trek fan, and I'm a Star Trek fan in the sense that I've seen a handful of the original series episodes, you know, like the classics I've kind of seen. I saw a little bit of Next Generation, enough that I thought it was pretty good, but I wasn't, you know, super obsessed. And, of course, Star Trek 2 is one of the greatest movies of all time.
All time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree. So, anyway, he was going to the 30th anniversary of Star Trek, which was in Huntsville, and which is nearby Nashville, close enough that it's not a giant Trek. And so he basically said, hey, do you want to come for free? And also, during the same weekend, there were a bunch of astronauts there.
Nice.
You know, so like, I got to meet Buzz Aldrin and it was cool.
Did he punch you in the face?
He did not, but I also,
literally one of my favorite things on the internet is that moon landing denier just gets up in his face and Buzz Aldrin just hauls back and clocks him.
Yeah. I mean,
get the fuck out of here. Yeah. With that shit.
Just a good rule of thumb. Don't fuck with astronauts.
Oh,
all right.
God. If you have, they don't care. They're bulletproof, man.
Right. Yeah. Right. So anyway, we go to the Star Trek convention, and, Steve, my buddy, is basically running around, like, doing a lot of shopping and getting things signed and that kind of thing. And I wasn't really all that interested in that, so I hung out in the theater that they had going most of the time and watched, like, all the Borg episodes from Next Generation and shit.
Nice.
But what I will say about the experience is that I did not have an appreciation, I don't think, for... like, what a community that was. Like, it was the most welcoming, nice, genuinely accepting group of people I think I've ever been around.
Oh yeah.
And it was really a good experience. Like, I've never been back to one. Oh, and I also at a reception almost knocked over Kate Mulgrew.
Nice.
So, yeah. But that's my Star Trek
claim to fame. The guy who took out Captain Janeway, finally.
Yeah. I was throwing some bows around the buffet table at the reception, and Captain Janeway got in my way.
And she's down.
She's wee, by the way. She was a tiny lady.
Oh, yeah, she's very tiny. She was in some 80s military movie. Was she in Remo Williams?
Maybe.
I think she was in Remo Williams.
I don't remember.
The adventure begins and ends after this horrible movie.
I remember that being on HBO a bunch, but I don't remember anything else about it.
I like Fred Ward in The Right Stuff. Played a good Gus Grissom, but man, Remo Williams, that was a rough movie to sit through. Yeah, she was totally...
Confirmed. Yeah. Confirmed.
Okay. Yeah. My brain still works, thank God.
Tremors, also a good Fred Ward film.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
All right, but...
Now we're way off track here.
Oh, yeah. Uncommon Valor is my favorite one.
Gene Hackman?
Yes, great movie.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen that one, too. So, as is the format of our show, we are going to begin with a little discussion of what we've been playing of late. And let's go with... you know what? I normally have a wheel for this. This time, I'm just flipping a coin between Justin and John. And Justin, what have you been playing of late, sir?
It's going to sound a lot like last time, but a whole lot of Metal Gear Solid.
Woohoo! I've seen that pop up a lot on Steam, yes.
Oh, yeah.
That game.
Been tearing through the story, and I have to say, it's some heavy stuff. It's some heavy stuff in there. I don't know how far Dolan is in it, but I just...
I just got Quiet.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
and that pickup and the subsequent like cutscene after that, pretty good.
Oh yeah, epic cutscene.
Yeah,
I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but
damn,
damn is right. You want to see? Yeah, you want to see some epic sniper action?
Yeah,
she's great. I just got to a further point in the game where you start to get a little deeper into the mother base stuff, and you start developing some things and. Kind of get this inclination that there are some splits between the guys back at base. You've got Ocelot and Campbell, and you know maybe they're not seeing eye to eye so much anymore, which is going to get interesting. You know, the game after this Metal Gear game, Big Boss is the bad guy. So yeah. You know by the end of this, like some crazy stuff's going to happen. And I'm just kind of trying to tear through the story missions and get to it.
What chapter are you on?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Quiet. I just did Quiet, and that was 11. And it said I'm 10% finished with the game.
I think I'm somewhere around 30% finished.
Oh, man. Yeah, wow. You're probably up in the high 20s or something then. Because there's like 50-something-ish story missions, I think.
It's 51, I think, yeah.
Okay.
I've got almost 40 hours into it.
Yeah, mine's, and so this is my confession about how this game is going to go.
John's confession.
I'm way behind you, 29 hours.
Wow, yeah.
I fart around in this fucking game like nobody's business. Oh my God.
I was doing that for a bit. I mean, there's probably a solid 2 or 3 hours of just me sitting in a helicopter listening to cassette tapes.
Yeah.
Like,
I always do like my base management while I'm sitting there in a helicopter. You know?
Yeah. And you can get sucked into all that stuff.
Oh my God. Like, I just unlocked the ability to send your staff out on missions to collect shit for you. And I'm on that like white on rice, man. It's like, boom, it's done. I got to send another one out. Otherwise I'm not making money. I actually bumped up against, I was in the red. Mother base was in the red.
Oof.
Right before I unlocked that ability. And now I have like 2 million credits.
See, I spent like no money, and you get these. There's a set of side missions where you rescue a guy who lets you like customize the guns. There's like
three. Is that the Emmerich guy?
No, that's a whole other plot line. It's literally like rescue the famous gunsmith, then you rescue him, and then you get a little thing. It's like, well, that apparently that's just like the guy who was learning from the famous gunsmith, and you like. You know, go get the next guy, and he's like, oh, well, he was learning from this guy. And then finally you get, like, the guy who lets you customize everything. And then I just, like, blew all my money because you have to buy guns to get all the parts. So, like, you get, like, a sniper rifle with any scope you want on it, but you have to have, like, unlocked all those scopes.
There's so many options in this game. It's but Bo and I looked at it. We did like a co-op quick look, which Twitch melted for me, so I never got a chance to publish it. But even at the early stages I was at, Bo, I mean, that looked pretty deep. And I can only assume. I mean, I didn't even know about this gun customization shit. So there's just, you know, this game just goes on and on.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff in it that like I had no clue about, and you every couple of days these new articles pop up where it's like, oh, there's like a hidden karma system where if you kill X number of guys, the piece of metal in your head gets bigger.
You get more evil. Yeah.
And it's just
just tons of nonsense shit like that. And it just keeps on going too. It's just, man, I don't know. And if I hadn't you and David hadn't mentioned dropping a supply drop on Quiet's head, that would have fucking taken me forever.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you're trying to sit there and tranquilize her, that's like an hour and a half boss fight.
Yeah,
but
because
yeah.
You guys told me that I S-ranked that mission. It's the first one I got an S-rank on.
Yeah, you drop two boxes on her head and you're done.
Yep.
I mean, she's just going to sit on her butt and take advantage.
So basically, it's the Jack Tripper solution of just insert, you know, Looney Tunes style comedy into the scenario.
She's like it slowly parachutes in. She's like the most attentive, accurate sniper apparently in the world, and you're able to like drop a box on her head on this loud ass parachute that comes flap, 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 and then it drops a box on her head and it kind of knocks her out and she runs away. And then in my game, at least, she went right back to the exact same perch, which is totally not what a good sniper would ever do. And I dropped another box on her head.
So what you're saying, Metal Gear Solid 5, totally unrealistic.
Or the most realistic game ever.
Once again, Schrodinger's game, where it is both it's the greatest game.
Until you look at it, until you play it, and then it's like, what is this crap?
I will say, I said it was like the best game I've ever played. I'll say it's the best stealth game I've ever played.
Yeah, I mean, there's one of the articles I have pegged for the news is... talks about kind of the failure spectrum of the game, which I think is what makes it, you know, the best or one of the best stealth games of all time, is because I think I talked about it last week, where it's not like Hitman, where if you, oh Christ, I fucked up, I got to restart the level because this isn't good. You know, like this one, I care less about the rank and more about, was my playthrough of that level like fun and satisfying? The one that Bo watched on Twitch that I recorded, like I was being really stealthy, but then it was the one where you have to kidnap or assassinate the three Russian commanders, and we got to like the third guy, and I had blown all my nighttime, and you know the sun came out and it was daylight, so I had to just kind of go in there, and I did it stealthy still. But it was really like loose and kind of haphazard, and I just like lucked my way through it. Like there was a point where a guy came around a corner and I shot him in the head with a stun gun and Fultoned him out, which made three other guys come down. And then I just happened to have time to like zap those guys, and it was fucking great. Like it was super intense. I was still able to play stealthy, but you know, it was real loose. It was great. That was an awesome feeling. And I didn't get a very good rank on the mission, but I didn't give a shit. So.
Yeah, you can always play the mission again. Mm-hmm. And that's where getting quiet is really awesome, because she will, if a dude sees you and you don't shoot the guy in time and she has a shot on him, you'll sit there and you're like trying to shoot him with a trank gun and you miss, and all of a sudden his head just gets blown off. Where she just takes him out. She's like, I got your back, dog.
That sounds like, so great.
You didn't ask me to kill this guy, but he's gone.
Does she replace your other companion?
Like, yeah.
You can't have your horse if you've got Quiet along. You can't have the dog, right. Which I have unlocked in. Okay.
And after this, I'll give you like a rundown of how you can control her to a degree. Like go into your map and you can tell her places to go and check out different places.
Nice.
And a lot of people don't catch on to that.
Yeah, that's the thing about this game is there's all these systems that, like you said, if I hadn't seen some article on Reddit or on, you know, Game Informer or something, I'd have no idea that was in the game. Like, I didn't know about the zoo, the animal conservation platform. I didn't know about it until you mentioned it last week. And then I'm like, well, where the fuck is it? I haven't unlocked it yet, I guess. And I couldn't figure it out. And then it's like when you're in your menu choosing where to land at your base, it's not at your actual base. There's like another – it's like this total Kojima afterthought. Like, hey, let's add a little animal thing. And, oh, we don't have a button for it on the menu. So instead of designing the menu over, if you hit Y when you're on this menu, it goes there. It's like, oh, fuck's sake. So I must have looked at it like 15 times.
It's the petting zoo button.
You go to the fucking zoo. I just want to see it. Oh, damn, it's different than the rest of it. Okay, why wouldn't that be the way it works?
And visiting the zoo makes your karma as a bad person go down.
Yes.
Like every time you go there, yeah. It's stupid.
I got a bear and a couple of donkeys. Nice.
That doesn't track for me because most villains have an animal familiar at all times. Like,
yeah.
You know, whether it's a cat or tigers on a chain or some shit like that.
Sharks with lasers.
Sharks with lasers, yeah.
Sharks with lasers, the obvious choice. That's a low-hanging fruit there. But have you been playing anything other than Metal Gear Solid 5 so we can just not talk about that for an entire episode again?
Well, yeah. I'm a little sad that you haven't played it yet.
I feel like you guys really have that covered. You did, okay. But it's one of those games that I'm sure is going to be great. I don't have time between now and Fallout 4 to get into it, so I'm going to catch it on a Steam sale or something. Like, I feel like I've seen enough of the game that when we talk about Game of the Year stuff, I'm not going to be unfamiliar, you know?
Well, and when that game's $29 or, you know, $19.99 or something, they're going to sell so many fucking copies of this game when it sells. So, yeah, it's top-notch.
A-plus game. Get it.
Love
the
it.
Biggest, classiest Hideo Kojima game.
It makes games great again. Other than that, I played Squad today. They just released, it went from pre-alpha to alpha on Friday, so the next tier of Kickstarter backers got into the game, and they like,
looks noobs. Like they,
yeah, it was really funny, because I hopped in the game earlier, and it was just like, they're like these spawn points, and I spawned in, and there's just like five people laying prone, all talking to each other, like, how do I do this? How do I do that? They're like, what's your Steam name? And like sending each other like guides from the forums and like the different keybinds and things like that. They like quadrupled the number of servers I think they have. That may be taken a little far, but I played a nice match earlier today. I think it was like 40 minutes. That's generally what you're getting into with that 40, 50 minute matches. And
so is like a match, I don't even know what to compare it to. Is it, is there like a goal to it?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So
is that goal murder?
Well, besides murder, I'm like, is there like an environmental goal that you have to achieve, or is
do you
it
remember
just kill the other guys, or
remember Rush Mode from the Battlefield games? It's kind of like that. So
I
like,
love that shit. That was great. Yeah. Because the battlefield like moved as the game progressed. I like that style. Yeah.
So it's kind of like that, where each team starts with their main base, and there's a series of points between those two bases, and you have to try and cap, you know, those points. You know, take them from the enemy. They start out neutral, so whoever can get there first, starts capping those points. So when you start a game, if you're in a game with people who know what they're doing, there'll maybe be three or four squads, and it'll be like, all right, squad one goes to this point, squad two goes to this point, squad three sets up a forward operating base where everyone else can spawn, and then you kind of the battle sort of evolves from there, where you end up running into the other team as they're trying to cap the points.
How big are the maps?
Right now, I would say they're, I think they're like something like 2 to 4 kilometers squared is like one of the bigger ones. I know their plans are to do some pretty huge maps because, I mean, they're going to have, you know, airplanes, helicopters, tanks, Humvees. I mean, it's going to have everything that you could really get into in a Battlefield or like an Arma kind of game.
Yeah.
But the gameplay is, I mean, it's really shaping up. They added a revive system for the medic, and the medic is actually like a viable position to play now, where you can actually bring, you know, team members back and keep them in the fight.
Nice.
And
kind of like, I mean, is this just sort of a hybrid Arma Battlefield game?
That's really how I would describe it. It's somewhere in between those two. It's got the pick up and play aesthetic of a Battlefield game, but it has all the sort of the tacticalness of an Arma game, where like you have to play with a squad, you have to talk to each other. Yeah. Where like if you hop on Battlefield 4 servers now, it's just kind of like Zerg Rush in like a StarCraft game.
It's all people trying to like jump out of a plane, going at a helicopter, throw a C4 on the helicopter, then jump back in their plane. They're all like trying to catch that on video. So it's all just like people trying to do circus tricks.
Right. You know, and there's no like, you know, John Dolan killed X360 sniper bro X. You know, it's, you know.
That's my username, by the way.
So like you don't see those stats until like the very end of the match, where it's like, I actually killed 7 people. You know, it's you're just firing at a silhouette on a hill, and eventually it.
And that's more Arma. Like I remember playing a lot of Arma missions where I'm just shooting into the trees.
It is really about volume of fire. Accuracy through volume, you know. Yeah. You have like 5 guys shooting at a hill to kill one dude.
If we cover this entire hill with bullets, we'll get him.
We got that guy.
Yep, we got zips in the tree line. Open fire.
But there's, you know, there's something really fun about that, and there's really intense moments. You know, we would play DayZ, and you get sweating, and your heart gets pumping, and that doesn't happen to me when I play Battlefield, but it happens to me when I play this, you know, when I play Squad, when I play DayZ, when I play Arma.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of experience, and I really, really think this game's going to take off.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out soon.
Is it going to be PC only, or is there any talk of that eventually porting over to consoles? Because, like, PC is always going to have its audience, but I'd be curious if something like that hit Xbox One or PS4, and
I really doubt it. The team who, you know, is behind this game is predominantly worked on that Project Reality mod, and they're PC Master Race all the way. I think it would take, you know, Microsoft or someone coming to them and saying, we really want to make this happen, but I really highly doubt it would.
Yeah, what's Iron Galaxy doing these days? Maybe they do a port. Maybe going the other direction, they'll be fine.
Yeah. That sounds cool. Yeah, your description of kind of being lying in between those two sounds like a nice place to be. So.
Yeah, it's hard for me to find people to play Arma with that aren't just complete strangers. And I think with this game, on top of all that, the community in this game is already just really awesome. The forums are great. You get into a game and everyone's talking to each other. You know, it's not a thing where like there's just complete silence. Like people are cracking jokes, people are having a good time. It's kind of like how Bo was talking about Star Trek. Like people are just nice. It's like you don't know how to play the game, someone's gonna teach you how to play it.
And it kind of behooves them to teach you how to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's really awesome. Other than that, I have not played anything else. A little bit of Rockets here and there. And I'm real sad because the newest GeForce Experience update, that beta, made it where you can't record your Rockets anymore because it, for whatever reason, it just doesn't work in that. And I was really wanting to get some of that stuff recorded.
Is it just that game, or is it Shadow Play is screwed up with that beta?
I think it's just certain types of games. And previously, there was a checkbox in Shadow Play where you could do desktop capture.
Yeah.
And that's gone in that new beta.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely weird. Which I hope it's something they fix. Not something that I like went and put a bug ticket in or anything for.
Yeah. Well, and then you switched to the beta release of that because it had that share.
Yes.
The share play. How did that work?
I tried it out with Metal Gear Solid with Sean, actually.
Okay.
And let him play my game. So I don't know the other way around.
Okay.
But he said it was a little bit laggy. I imagine it's like, remember when On Live came out?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, this is like the future of gaming. You know, we've got these supercomputers that are going to do all the heavy lifting, and you just play it from your house. And then, like, every game was really laggy, especially, like, a first-person shooter. Like,
yeah.
You're not going to play a game like that.
Eventually, that's going to work, though. I mean, like, this is kind of the beginnings of it. Like, I'm really excited for, you know, I mean, I love playing games with my friends. I love, like, the co-op aspect, but sometimes it's fun to, like, I'd love to be able to call up a buddy and play Metal Gear Solid and just do, like, you know, hot swap the controller back and forth via the internet. And if that shit, you know, when they get it, I mean, it works pretty good on PS4. Mm-hmm. We've done that, Bo and I have done that a couple times on a few games. Or where, you know, you can do, like, couch co-op, where you're both playing, because you can do that on Diablo on PS4, where, you know, if Bo owns it and I don't, he can share play it with me for an hour at a time, and then, you know, your lease runs out and you have to do it again, but then I can, like, play player two in his game, and it worked good. So hopefully they get that shit figured out, because I'd love to be able to do that on PC.
Yeah, yeah. It's good there. And I've played a fair amount of the PS4 PS Now service, which is, you know, basically streaming a lot of PS2 and PS3 games. And it's all right. You know, like every now and again, there'll be connection problems. But once you're synced up to a game, it seems to be pretty solid.
I blame Comcast for all the woes.
I know when John and I were playing, you actually get the option where it's like, you know, is this person just watching? Is this person controlling and you're controlling at the same time? So like at any time, I could just pick up my controller and start playing
yeah.
and tell him like, hey, chill, I got this for a second.
Yeah.
But then there's also, like, are they player two? Which
that's,
I think is
yeah,
is
so
the
cool.
the really cool part, because, like, Rockets has no multiplayer, but there's local co-op.
Yeah.
So I could just stream it to him and make him player two, and instantly that game now has multiplayer.
It's really interesting that the graphics card manufacturers are the ones that are coming up with this technology. That's really weird that that's where it's, I don't know if it's weird, but it's interesting that that's where it's coming from, because, you know, PS4, they basically have that working. You can do, you know, local co-op share play, you know, via the internet with somebody, and it works pretty good. So, I mean, I guess it's got to be a third party that comes up with that for PC, because I don't see Windows putting that kind of functionality in.
I think maybe.
I don't know.
It behooves the graphics cards people to do, like, especially with Shadow Play, because they've got it to a point where you can record your game on even like a subpar system, and it doesn't really impact your performance, because you just take a couple cores and dedicate it to, you know, doing the actual recording part, and you never really see an impact, which I love. Like, we bought those EverMedia cards. I don't even have that installed in my new computer, because Shadow Play just works.
Works better. Yeah, so my problem is, like, I don't have a new enough processor to use Shadow Play. So the next computer, that's what I'm switching to. But yeah, that's really cool that they're doing that, though. It's the future.
The future.
The future.
It's like looking into the future.
Yeah.
I think that stuff is getting there, and, you know, The one of the other problems is just the state of broadband in this country being inconsistent, and, you know, shit like data caps and things like that that we have bitched about interminably on this show.
Yeah.
But, like...
It doesn't help anybody. I mean, what...
Right.
I'll give you a quick little story. Something I really hate is the different internet companies sending people, like, guy rolls up in your neighborhood and knocks on your door and is trying to sell me AT&T, mm-hmm. you know, which... They just put AT&T fiber in my neighborhood. I understand it's the same fiber that Google Fiber is going to use. Guy comes to my house, is like trying to sell me on like $57 a month. You can get internet. I'm like, what about data caps? He's like, same as Comcast, 250 gigs, 10 bucks for every 10 gigs after that.
Jesus.
And then I'm like, what are your down and up speeds? He proceeds to pull his cell phone out and do a speed test and tells me I'm only getting 10 megabits down. I'm like, how
that's
are
useless. Yeah.
Well, but I'm like, how, like, are you on my Wi-Fi right now, man? Like, yeah. Do you even know what you're talking about? I'm like, you just pulled a cell phone out, you're on cell service, and yeah. You just got 10 gigabits down through AT&T.
You realize you're not connected to fiber, right?
Yeah, like, he's like, yeah, it's real bad. You're only getting 10 gigabits down. Like, you're only
salesman ever.
Like, you're only getting that on your cell phone. I'll go inside and do a speed test and get 20, which is what I normally get on Comcast. You know, I just really hate that they send people door to door. It's like, ugh.
We had somebody kind of post up in our, there's a Facebook group for my apartment building, and somebody posted up, like, from the AT&T UVerse service, and it was the same thing of, like, can you guarantee me, you know, 50 megs consistently down and 10 to 15 up and no data cap, because that's what's going to sell me on moving. And they were like, well, no. And I was like, all right, well, we're done then. That's the end of this conversation.
Yeah. I was like, I will wait till Google Fiber is a thing, and I will pay $50-ish dollars a month, and they don't give a flying flip how much, you know, bandwidth I use.
Yeah, because they acknowledge that the internet is not a finite resource that we have to dole out as if it was, you know, sweet, sweet gold or something. It drives me crazy. The whole data cap thing is just... It is such an arbitrary piece of shit policy.
Yeah,
and the number of times I've talked to, like, Comcast reps who don't know from nothing about that stuff, you know, just like every Comcast rep you talk to, doesn't really understand the technology that they're servicing or selling, so...
They hook wires together. That's what they know.
And on the customer service side of it, it's like, I know to hit this button if you say this thing, and it's going to tell me how to reply, you know?
Yeah.
Google Fiber can't get here quick enough. I'm hoping that, I'm hoping by what, spring 2016, is that what they were saying, is somewhere in that neighborhood?
Something like that, yeah. And he was trying to tell me, oh yeah, it's going to be like 5 more years before Google Fiber's here. I was like, sure it is.
And you get paid on commission, right?
Yeah. I was like, can I go back to watching the anime that I was watching before you knocked on my door now? Like, can you leave? Ghost in the Shell is playing, bro. Yeah,
he was like, sure, nerd.
Then he told me that he used to draw for Disney. I'm not even kidding you with this. That he had a character in Pixar. And I was like, oh, and now you're selling AT&T door to door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what happened? You know, what trouble did you get in at Pixar?
He was the guy who drew the dick on the Little Mermaid poster. Yeah, it didn't turn out so good, but, you know, I got my last laugh in.
Yeah, fuck that poster.
You can, if you fold it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, anything else from you, Justin? Are we done with you?
I think we're done with me.
All right. Johnny Dolan.
You're fired.
Yeah. Yeah, Junior Schwarzenegger's taking over on The Apprentice?
Yeah.
What?
Did you hear he's going to use "you won't be back" and "you're terminated" as his catchphrase?
Oh, man, that hurts. That is so bad, it physically pains me.
And I can't believe... I read the story somewhere, but Hasta La Vista Baby was not in there, so I mean, you know he's gonna pull that out.
Oh, it's coming. Yeah, he's gonna do that.
he might as well just put on some garters and stand on a street corner. Because he has truly reached whore status.
That's fantastic. That bitch there is great. Snapping his gum. What you looking for, hon? What you looking for, hon?
Are you looking for a good time?
You looking to party tonight?
Hey, I do everything. I get weird. You gotta make him clap as you leave the room so you know he's not stealing from you. That's good whore etiquette, by the way.
You seem wise in the ways of Schwarzenegger whorum.
I wouldn't say I feel like I'm wise in the ways of the umbrella whoring.
Okay.
And
it's Schwarzenegger. It's a general topic. Okay.
You know, I'm a whoremonger.
You've read an article or two about New Orleans, you know?
Yeah, right. I there was an article on Salon that told me everything I need to know.
That's right.
Beware
pickpockets and loose Schwarzeneggers.
Oh man, you get a Schwarzenegger in your whole hotel room that doesn't want to leave. You got trouble on your hands.
Still not as bad as an OJ in your hotel room that won't leave.
Oh. Hey, all right. Is this a thing I made up because it would be sweet justice, or does he have syphilis?
I don't know. He's currently in jail, as far as I know.
Maybe I'm confusing him and Capone because they're both murderers, but for some reason I thought that he had some kind of disease or something was dying in jail. It wasn't just.
I haven't heard that, but that would be some sweet justice. So.
All right. Quit avoiding the question. What have you been playing?
Oh, sorry. Metal Gear Solid 5, but we covered that.
I feel like we have.
I think for like the next four podcasts, we just Metal Gear Solid 5.
It's not going to stop. I already told you my 29 hours and I'm 10% done. I mean, I'm into this game for easily 120 hours at this point.
Oh, it's stupid, yeah.
Welcome to Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yeah, I know. This is my Dragon Age.
That's my Fallout 3.
Except good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My Fallout 3 clock was ridiculous.
That's stupid.
Yeah. I've hopped over to Mad Max a bit as well in between Metal Gear Solid play sessions, and I still like that game a lot. I last time went off on a bit of a tirade because people were rating it what I thought was pretty low ratings, and I still think that. It's repetitive. I get that criticism of it, but I have yet to stop having fun doing all of the things that you do in that game. So
yeah, if the repetition is of things that are fun to do, then maybe that's not terrible.
The game is just beautiful and driving. I'm a huge Mad Max fan anyway, so I might be, you know, leaning, and you know, I might be biased slightly.
Wait, but you just saw Fury Road, is that right?
I just saw it.
That's crazy.
Yes,
that's a great movie.
I had to wait for it to come out on. Yeah, I have a child, and going to a Mad Max movie is not something that happens on a date night. Wife. I watched Fury Road about a week and a half ago, and enjoyed the hell out of it, and then watched it again the next night.
Yeah,
it was fantastic.
It's real good.
Oh my god,
it was real, real good.
Yeah. So that, you know, and then the next night, jump back into Mad Max the game and play some more. And that, like I was saying, that game is just gorgeous. The heat effects for the desert and like the sun glare and blowing sand and stuff, it just looks so fucking awesome. And when you throw into that you're driving around, like the car, you can pick your own car body at the beginning of the game when you unlock you go find your car that they've taken away from you. And like I got like a kind of a mid-70s Corvette Stingray body that's all rusted out and it's got spikes and shit all over it. So it just looks badass.
You didn't do a Ford Falcon?
No.
You can get the Falcon though, right? Like the original Mad Max car?
Yeah, the Interceptor or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that's in there.
Okay, good.
But yeah, I just love that Stingray body. It just looks fucking awesome. But yeah, it's got serious depth to it as well, just like Metal Gear. I mean, there's tons of upgrade options. Like you can go down these upgrade trees for your character, for your car. I'm at currently at a spot where I've gotten to like kind of one of the warlords, and I befriended him by doing a couple of missions for him, and so he lets me park my shit at his base. And then within his base are all of these kind of fetch quests where if you go find these four parts, you can now come back to this base and refill your canteen whenever you want because you found all the parts to make a distillery for the water. Or if you go out and find these four parts scattered around the map, while you're not playing the game, a small amount of scrap metal will be gathered up for you by this team that you assemble by building this thing. And then you can build an armory so that you can come back and every so often there will be more bullets for your shotgun. So you don't have to scrounge quite as hard anymore because you did the work up front. So it's got that same Metal Gear building upon things you've done earlier in the game to make the game a little easier, but then new, bigger, harder things get added as you play into it. And then also you throw in there that you get to go beat the shit out of guys with like a Batman combat system. I mean, it's just, I don't get the criticism of this game. It's just fun driving. It's beautiful. Beating the shit out of guys is fun. Like you pick them up and do fucking wrestling body slams on them and shit and punch them in the head. If you've got a shotgun, if you got some shells for your shotgun, in the middle of a fight, anytime you want, you hold down the left bumper, and it goes into like this slow motion aiming mode, and you can just shoot a guy in the face with your shotgun. Or after you hit him a few times, you'll get a prompt to, if you're carrying a few shivs, if you found some shivs out in while you were going through scrap, you can knife a guy, but he'll like grab him by the back of the head and like stick the knife up in the bottom of his jaw, like fucking Doom Sting killing style. It's fucking awesome. So that game's great. If you're a fan of Mad Max at all, don't believe the negative reviews it got from the critics out there. I can't wrap my head around why they didn't like it. Like all the pieces from all the games that they're complaining, oh, this was in Shadow of Mordor. Oh, this was in that game. You know, it's like that game. All those games were really good. So I don't get why putting them all together into one game is a bad idea. I don't know.
My theory, I think, still stands, which is if you're reviewing a bunch of these open world games that there have been a shit ton of lately, that maybe just another one of those is your complaint.
Yeah. You know? Well, and that's the thing, too, with, Giant Bomb is a site that I go to a lot, and they, all the guys there have been playing Metal Gear Solid, and they're all saying, yeah, it's great, it's a great game, but their, like, play clocks on it are, like, 30... 40, 50 hours to complete the whole story. So you know that they're just like blasting through so they can, you know, and that's their job is to get on there and like be done with that game so they can talk about it. But I almost feel sorry for them sometimes for games like that because there's just so much to be experienced in some of these games and they have to just kind of plow through it so they can get their review out. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe, you know, like they just, Metal Gear is a really good open world kind of a game and Dragon Age isn't that, you know, we're not too far away from that release date, and I can imagine how another one of those would wear you down, but still.
I think you mean Fallout, not Dragon Age.
Yeah, Fallout.
Yeah, because Fallout is something I'm looking forward to playing.
Yeah, so that game's great. Give that one a try. I tried out The Long Dark again. They released an update for it recently that smoothed out some stuff, added some pretty sweet weather effects that kind of made the transitions between weather events smoother and kind of take more time in that game. But I still have the same problem with it that I did originally, that it is the difficulty levels are kind of screwed up on it. Like I was playing on easy where like wolves and shit won't attack you unless you attack them first. Because the first game that I played, on like the normal level where you'll be running through the woods and like a wolf will come and just take you down. And I was having survival times in that game where it was like, I don't know, 38 minutes. And then like my longest game was maybe an hour. And then when I put it on easy, like I currently have a game going right now where I have so much goddamn meat and canned goods on me that I can't walk. So there needs to be like a difficulty setting in between easy and medium, I think.
Just when you put it on easy, less stuff.
Yeah, something
is around.
Yeah, but it's still really cool. Like the weather effects are great, the sound effects are great. Like the sense of just like total isolation is really well done in that game. And I mean, if you're, it's basically, you know, it's the same criticism of all those survival games, is that it's just basically a walking simulator. Because I mean, you spawn, and you, the backstory is that you were in a plane. Your plane you were on crashed in the Canadian wilderness, far north.
The and, most polite wilderness available
yeah,
to
that's
you.
That's right. But yes. Oh, yeah, the wilderness just as you're walking through it, the trees are going, sorry.
When you crash into the forest, it actually is like, oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry, sorry for the crash.
Sorry about that.
Sorry about your plane, eh? Yeah.
You need a soccer player to eat or something?
There's a Tim Hortons over there, eh?
You ought to get yourself a 10-pack or something.
That's the easy mode. It's funny too, because when you're in the inventory and you're going through, like, you've got like a stocking cap or something, they actually refer to it as a toque.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
Jelly donut coming.
But it's, I mean, it's a cool game. It's just it's still in, you know, early access, and it's really like what they've got is really polished, but it's just sandbox mode. There's no story mode, there's nothing else there other than if you start a new game, you spawn, and you basically have to walk through the woods and find a shelter, and hopefully there's some things to loot inside of it, and you can start a fire, and you can, like, I got really lucky. I found a rifle, I found ammo, I found, like a gallon jug of water. There was a ton of wood, like chairs and stuff, in the first house that I came to that you could break down into firewood. And so my guy was living large. Like, I found a bunch of, like, ski jackets and boots and gloves and hats and just tons of shit. So he wasn't super cold. But, like, the easiness of, like, all the loot made it a little boring. But then there were still some times where I was, like, walking trying to find the next house, because there's, like, multiple areas. One of the things they did in this update was they added a new, locale that you can go around. And so you're, as you play the game more, you get familiar with the woods, so that if you do have to respawn, you know, oh, okay, if I go here and here, I can get to the, you know, where that cabin is. So it's not procedural in any way. So once you've played a map a few times, you start to learn where the houses are, and you like the exploration and the, you know, unfamiliarity with your surroundings that, you know, would happen if it was, you know, really trying to simulate that experience starts to go away. So if you're playing it on hard, that adds to the kind of it getting boring fast, because, oh, I died. Okay, now I got to get to that fucking house. Oh, shit, I died again before I got there. So then you switch over to easy, and you're like, oh, I got to that house, and I got a bunch of shit, and I got to that house, and I got a bunch of shit. And I don't know. Somewhere in between there is where that game's good spot lies. But still, I like it. I keep going back to it just because the atmosphere is so good on it. But hopefully they adjust it somewhat.
I really like it. I used to love this book when I was a kid called Hatchet by Gary Paulsen, which is just about a kid who crashes in the Canadian wilderness and has to survive. And it always just, I mean, every time we play that game, it just reminds me of that, where you're the, like you said, like the sort of being alone, the isolation, the, it's not really a hard game, but there is that overwhelming sense of you're alone. And you're fighting against wilderness itself, and it's pretty cool.
I think it would make a good VR game.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because it's got kind of a cool, and it's built in Unity, so it, I mean, it doesn't have like the highest graphic fidelity you've ever seen of anything. But what they've got there, like the style of it, is really cool. It's almost cartoony in a way.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but the sound that they've got, one of the things they added in this update was, which is really cool, which I noticed right away, was like contextual sound. So if you are carrying like a metal pan or something, or like your canteen is half full, it sounds different when you walk than if it was full. Like you hear more water sloshing, and you hear your equipment like shifting around on your person in the game, and that's done really well. Like I was, you know, just wearing snowsuit and had a couple of cans of food on me, and you're walking along and you just kind of hear like this, you know, the snow pants rubbing together, kind of that vinyl on vinyl sound, or, and like your boots hitting the snow. And then as you find some more shit, like you kind of hear some little rattles and things, you know, as you're walking along. And that was really cool. And then, you know, add in like the weather effects are great. The snow looks really cool. The wind sounds are awesome. Like it's one of the problems I have with some of those games is they run out of sound effects. Like, you're like, oh, there's that wind loop again. And I haven't noticed that yet in this game. So they do a real good job with the environment in that game being really cool. So,
all right.
I have a toiletry.
Go on.
It is called Out There Omega Edition. And the best way to describe it is take the combat system out of FTL, Faster Than Light, and maybe like flesh out kind of like the story mode of it a little more. And it's basically you are an astronaut who is on a mission and something goes wrong and you get warped out into the middle of nowhere and you have no idea where the fuck you are. And you are short on, you need metal to fix your hull, you need fuel to fly between planets, and you need oxygen so that you don't suffocate. And so you go from system to system, you fly between stars, and you pick them off this big star map. And the object of the game is to find your way back to Earth or your home. You don't even know if you're in the same galaxy or not at this point. So you're flying along, and you encounter planets that are... It kind of tells you this is a gaseous planet, this is a rocky planet, or this is a biological planet. So you can then land on each of these planets, and on the gaseous planet, you can mine it for fuel. You'll get like helium, which can power your engines. And on the rocky planet, you can get iron or you can get tungsten, and you use all these different, and they're like, go pretty deep into the periodic table for elements, and you use these different things to like build upgrades for your ship as you're going along. So you can like upgrade your fuel efficiency so that you can use less fuel between jumps, or you can upgrade your engines so that you can jump further. You can, you know, skip systems along the way to your goal. And as you're going along, and if you land on like a biological planet, one of the advantages to that is you can just open the doors on your ship and refill your oxygen tanks. And then you will encounter life forms on the planets. And one of my favorite things in the game, I think is really cool, is that when you encounter life on a planet, you talk to them, but they speak in gibberish, and you can't read any of it. It's just all – there's no voiced audio or anything to it. It's just all text. But it's all gibberish, and then it asks you this – it says something like, this creature – seems to be asking you a question, and they're pointing towards your ship, and you have iron, and you have you know, helium in your hold. Would you like to give them some iron or some helium? And then you pick one, and then it says, oh, the alien seems pleased, and he has walked away. And so then after that little interaction is over, it says, you learned the word iron. So then next time you encounter another species or the same species, when you see the gibberish on the screen, the word iron will be translated in that. And as you progress, you translate more and more words so you can understand what they're trying to say to you more, which is kind of a cool mechanic. It's a roguelike, and you fucking die a lot, and then you just start over. And it is really goddamn hard. I probably played 20 playthroughs before I survived longer than about 15 minutes. And then I went on a playthrough where I survived, in game time, like 387 days, and which was like me playing that game for, I don't know, probably a week and a half of one single game, just in short sittings and in front of the TV and on the toilet, and then I ran out of gas and I died. I had to start over before I like you as you play through it, you find that there's like, oh, well, you came across this species, or you find this floating orb in space and it says, go to this system and all will be revealed. So you get this marker on your map. But the problem is you can only view so much of the map. So as you're going down the star map, you might go down a route that just because of the jump distance of your ship is a dead end when you get to a certain point. So you have to backtrack. And if you like mined all of those previous planets for all the oxygen and fuel and metal that you could get from them, you're going to fucking run out of shit before you can get back to the fork in the road and go down another spoke. So it's really fucking hard. But the aesthetic of it is really cool. The music is awesome. And it is like $4. So if you liked FTL, And one of the things I didn't like about FTL was like the kind of the repetitive combatness of it, and I wish there was a little more like text adventure along with it. And this game totally has that. It's not perfect. I think it's a little too difficult, but it's definitely worth checking out if you're looking for something new. So, out there, Omega Edition. Pretty cool.
All right. Yeah, sounds all right.
Yeah.
Also available on Steam.
Yeah, you can get the Steam version. I would just totally get the version for your phone because it's like a, oh, I've got 5 minutes. I'm going to jump in and go through a few planets. And like sitting down in front of your computer to play this game doesn't seem like the best way to play it to me.
How much is the Steam version, out of curiosity?
It's more. I think it's more. Yeah.
$9.99.
Yeah. See, that sounds like bullshit to me.
Yeah.
If I can get it for $4 on my phone, why can't I get it for $4 on Steam?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because Gaben says no.
It's something.
I need more knives.
Yeah, that's about it. I've been playing a ton of Minecraft on PS4 with my son, and I'm still very impressed with the console version of that, with the way that they set up the crafting menus in there. I think it's great. I like the old PC where we had to just kind of figure it out for yourself or look it up. But the way they do it on consoles, where it's just all laid out on a menu, you just kind of scroll back and forth across, works great. As far as playing it with a five-year-old, it makes it really easy for them to pick up some of the more complicated crafting that you need to do in that game. I tamed a horse.
In Minecraft, you mean?
In Minecraft.
Yeah.
No, in real life, too, yeah.
Right. Well, one kept coming up to the back porch, and
got a horse, yeah.
Yeah, now we have a horse.
Oh, this is just like Minecraft. I should tame this horse.
Yeah.
No.
That'll learn you what you need to know about animal husbandry.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. You feed cows wheat, they do it, and you get another cow.
Give wolves skeleton bones.
That's right.
They will become your friends.
Yeah. My son likes to, he doesn't like to play with mobs turned on, so we play on the peaceful setting, but I think he's ramping up to turning on the bad guys because I keep saying, he's like, oh, well, how do you tame dogs? And I'm like, oh, well, you got to feed them bones. Where do you get bones? Well, you get bones from skeletons. Oh. That's like, well, we could turn them on for a little while and just kill some skeletons and get, he's a little, he got blown up by creepers a couple times when we first started playing, and that put him off that right away.
Well, here you go, son. This is the version for pussies.
Yeah. Well, if you want to be a little Nancy boy, then I guess we'll play.
I mean, we can put you in a dress, and you can play in this mode all you want.
Exactly.
That's good parenting. I know it when I hear it.
That's right. So, you know, I'm slowly getting them in it. We dug, one of my favorite things to do in Minecraft is just dig giant holes. I don't know why. It's like Zen. And we hit bedrock the other day when we were playing. So I've got like a 24 by 24 hole that goes down like 200 blocks. Staircase all the way down it. Caves going off in every direction. We explored all the caves. You know, Minecraft.
Yeah.
It's just like it really is just something to do. Like I'll play it on the laptop while I'm watching like Always Sunny in Philadelphia reruns or something, you know.
Neither of those are bad things to do with your time.
Mm-hmm. That's my list.
All right. So games that I have been playing go something like this. I played a little bit more of The Witcher 3. Dipped my toes back into that. And
you had started that previously, right?
Yeah. And I ended
up back at release, right?
Yeah. And so I basically started over and played to the point I got the last time. But I plan to continue this time instead of just stopping and getting distracted by something shiny. Because that's a good game, and now that it's been out for a while and it's super patched and it plays better, the movement's better.
Yeah, they like patched in a different control scheme.
Not a different control scheme, but the way that Geralt of Rivera moved was real blocky. It almost felt like tank controls at times. Yeah. And that's been smoothed out a lot, so that feels a lot better. And
is his last name really Rivera?
Of Rivera.
Okay, his name's Geraldo Rivera.
His name is Geraldo Rivera. The goal is to open a big safe.
An empty safe?
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't gotten to the end of the game.
Can you get hit in the face with a chair?
No, but he's surprisingly xenophobic.
Okay.
So that's
all lines
fun.
Up. That all lines up.
But I played some more of that. I played a little bit of the Telltale Borderlands game.
Oh, yeah.
How's and, that?
You know, if you like Telltale games, it is more of that, you know, in terms of the way that the, you know, dialogue choices go and that kind of thing. Probably the first season of The Walking Dead is probably the best example. I mean, that's, even if you don't like that style of game, that story is good enough to propel you through it. I didn't get deep enough into this to be able to tell you for sure that the story is compelling enough. I ran into a situation where I died, and I think this was part of my UAC problems, but it wouldn't load the save that should have started, and I was at the point where I was like, I don't want to restart this game completely right now.
Yeah.
But what I played of it was really enjoyable. It definitely takes that. You know, fortunately, those Telltale games have a lot of that cel-shaded art style anyway.
Yeah.
So the look of Borderlands lends itself really well to that setting. And the characters were interesting, and it was pretty funny. And, yeah, I was having a good time with it. And
is there any, like, recurring voice actors from the Gearbox games?
Yeah, the guy who begins the story in...
Marcus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the one kind of narrating this as well.
Okay, cool.
And I think there's going to be some crossover where you see characters from the games, because they're sort of mentioned early on, and I feel like, much like Walking Dead, it's going to be a situation of like, hey, there's the character that I know and love.
It's the Vault Hunter.
Yeah. But it's its own story for sure. Like, the basic premise of it is that you're a Hyperion employee post Handsome Jack.
Nice.
And are trying to, you're about to be promoted, and then you find out that you're not being promoted, you're actually being demoted, and the guy who is taking over your position has ejected the boss into space. And the opening scene is you walking in and seeing the boss who is going to promote you floating outside the window. So yeah.
Are you on the moon base thing?
Yeah, you're on the big station at first, okay. And then you go to Pandora because you overhear that there's a deal going on that is going to secure this guy's position in the Hyperion Corporation, and you and your buddies decide you're going to intercept that deal and give you leverage so that you can get back into the good graces of Hyperion, and I assume it kind of explodes outward from there.
Is it still in that same interaction style where your mouse cursor kind of changes, and like, I'm specifically thinking of the scene in Walking Dead first season where you have to walk through the crowd of zombies and you kind of have to line up the thing. How do they translate Borderlands gameplay into that
stuff? Well, you're not shooting guns or anything, really. It's not that. Okay. I mean, it's much more of an adventure style game. So that it is very much like The Walking Dead, where, yeah, you're kind of moving. In this case, I was playing with a controller, so, you know, you're moving the cursor around on the screen and looking at stuff and interacting with people and making your dialogue choices based on, you know, how you feel like the conversation should go.
It's more of a Telltale game with a Borderlands skin on it.
Yeah, okay. but it also, I think, captures the sense of humor of Borderlands real well, so it doesn't just feel like they pasted Borderlands onto the Telltale model.
Okay.
It seems like, oh yeah, they're using that structure to tell a story that feels like a Borderlands story, even though you're not doing a loot game. Yeah. You know? So that was enjoyable. I'm actually looking forward to getting more into that because I thought the story was fun, and I definitely got a couple of laughs out of it. You know, seeing the boss float by the window, and you look at him, it's like, hey, that's my boss, you know. that was pretty funny, and I can't think of the actor's name. The guy who was Putty on Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah. Warburton?
Yeah, Patrick Warburton is the villain.
Nice.
And he does a good job. You know, he's a good voice actor.
Oh, absolutely. He's stellar.
So I played that. I played, as far as toiletries go, this is sort of a return to a toiletry that I played a while back. I played some, God, what is it called? The Marvel Puzzle Quest, you know, the Match 3 game.
Yeah.
And I hit a point where you can join an alliance in that game, which just gives you a bunch of free shit on a daily basis. So I found myself, like, the part of that game that really turned me off is I didn't feel like I was making any progress, and I felt like I was going to need to spend money to do that. And yeah. It turns out you kind of just need to join an alliance, and you're going to start getting the stuff to kind of level up, you know, your characters in the game. So I've been enjoying that quite a bit, actually. And, you know, because it's a match three game, it is, you know, 5 minutes here and there. And I found I use it as a way to kind of break up tasks I have to do.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, okay, I need to do 10 things today. Every time I do two of those things, I'm going to spend 5 minutes and play this stupid game. Yeah. And as a result, I've really been enjoying it and kind of seen some progression in that game. In as much as you're going to see in a, like, Puzzles and Dragons kind of style game.
That's kind of what I like about mobile gaming, is it's like a palate cleanser for just shit you got to do, you know?
Yeah, it's a nice distraction from, like, yeah. I'm not going to think about the other 8 things I got to do today for the next 5 minutes while I'm trying to figure out how to match these tiles so that I can make Iron Man fire a laser. So... it, you know, on that level, it's real enjoyable.
That sounds better than most things you get to do during the day.
Yeah. And I've found the character of Storm to be incredibly useful in that game, because if you are attacked, one of her passive abilities is to just deal damage to anyone who attacks you over a certain threshold. And so
that's all free to play.
Yeah, I mean, there's a microtransaction hook to it all. You know, like, you can buy coins that lets you buy other characters and stuff like that. But, I haven't felt the need to do any of that, especially now that, like, I've figured out the secret of how to play that game and get some satisfying progression out of it, which is to play the daily challenges, join an alliance, because... it don't cost you nothing to do that, and if your alliance does well, and I'll bail on alliance in a heartbeat, like, if a bunch of people aren't playing, the higher the alliance ranks, the more shit you get, so you can just constantly swap that out. And
is that all, like, hooked up through Facebook or something?
No, that's all in-game.
In-game, it's just like a part of the lore of the game, alliance.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. And, you know, and they do some stuff in there that makes it a little more fun. Like, you can send your heroes off to go fight for someone else in your alliance and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's, as far as those games go, it's relatively inoffensive in terms of the microtransaction stuff. I mean, there's plenty of, you know, wallpaper all over the place in that game to tell you how you can spend money.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't run into a point where I felt like I had to, and I'm just, I, you know, it's a toiletry. I don't give a shit enough about the game, no pun intended, to spend money to feel like I'm making, like, I'm, you know, I'm gonna be the best Marvel Puzzle Quest player out there. Yeah. Like, I don't have that impulse. It's just like, well, this is a game I like to play when, you know, I'm taking a shit, or, you know, just at work and want to take that 5 minutes to just, like, okay, here's, I'm going to do this for 2 minutes and then get back to work.
Don't sell yourself short. You can become that pro MLG Marvel Puzzle Quest player.
Nice.
Take it all esports level. I could be good. Man. I could be good.
I'm always curious. Like, I'm thankful somewhat that I never have the desire in free to plays to, like, put money in. And when I bump up against, like, oh, well, this just got, like, gated. I can totally tell what's happening here. My progress is limited. But, like, if the basic gameplay of it still holds up and is fun, like, you could spend money in Angry Birds, but the game itself is fun. So, all right, I fucked it up this try. I used my 5 lives, but next time I play, I know, okay, you got to use this bird to do that thing, and you got to hit the tower here so it'll fall over. And, like, I'm glad that I can put it down, but I'm curious, like, what, like, people's lifestyle that leads them to put, like, a lot of money into that game. Like, where...
I think it's just, like, having an addictive personality, right? I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, or just, like, the time. Like, I think if I was younger and, like, was, you know, kind of back in an earlier time of my life where I had more time to just kind of piss away on shit, like, I mean, I used to play video games way more than I do now, you know? So now when I do it now, it's like a treat. Like, this is my, okay, I got to get all this shit done. And then later tonight, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to play some Metal Gear because that's my time. And it used to be, oh, I'm home from work. It is 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm going to play games for 8 hours.
Right.
This is the stage I'm in. This is like, oh, it's Saturday. I happen to wake up at 8 a.m. Why don't I play Metal Gear Solid all day?
Games. Okay. Man. Yeah, and my life just doesn't work that way anymore, you know? And it's, I wonder if I was still in that, well, maybe not, you know? I would probably sit down and play Metal Gear all day instead of sitting there on my phone playing, you know, Bejeweled or whatever, but it's interesting. The psychology behind free-to-play is a fascinating topic.
There was a really good article, I want to say it was maybe even Eurogamer, where it was a guy who worked for a mobile company talking about the amount of data that they mine of those games that tells you, like, here's how you catch the whales in the game. It's like you can see user behavior and what they're playing, when they're playing it, how they spend money, and you can tailor the events in the game specifically to the whales, because you don't give a shit about the people who aren't playing or aren't paying for the game. You're like, okay, this subset of users that's the bulk of our income enjoys this kind of event, so that's what we're going to create.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. If I can find it again, I'll link it in the show notes. But really interesting article about that kind of thing. But reading that made me real self-aware of, as I'm playing this game, like I don't, the Marvel game, I don't have it linked to Facebook or anything like that. You know, I'm sure that there's data that they're pulling out, but, you know, the data is like, oh, it looks like this guy poops a couple of times a day.
I link if it like requires some sort of login because I'm playing on Android, I always hook it up to Google Plus.
Nice.
Which I am not using for anything.
Yeah, Google Plus is the biggest never was that ever happened. Google
Plus, you were just so late.
You know, it's like a lot of those kind of apps, like, you know, whatever Twitter clones or Facebook clones. It's just, it's like, hey, somebody got there first and did it right, or did it well enough that that's what people did.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like Spotify, like Apple Music ain't Spotify.
Nope. Yep. Well, although I do enjoy Apple
Music. No one cares what you think about Apple Music. You will not undermine my point. I haven't tried Apple Music. I have no idea if it's good or bad.
I have no reason to, because Spotify works fucking great.
It's just like Spotify.
Yeah, and I'm already kind of in the Spotify ecosystem where, you know, I've got my friends list and my playlist and all that stuff. And and I'm also sick and fucking tired of Apple telling me that it's got to update iTunes or QuickTime or iCloud or whatever the fuck it is. So much so that it bothers me to invest in it. Like, I've got an iPhone, but I if it weren't for doing the podcast and having to use iTunes to kind of verify the uploads and whatnot, I would not have iTunes installed on my computer.
I despise iTunes.
You have iTunes installed on your computer?
I kind of have to, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the
worst piece of fucking software, man. It's terrible.
Next to the Spotify Windows app, it is one of the worst, like, pieces of software I've ever run into in my life.
Man, that Spotify PS4 app, though. Holy God, that's a good app.
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about this.
Oh, yeah. So on the PS4, the Spotify is now like PlayStation Music has become Spotify.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Sony forked over a little cash for that to happen, but you can control, like, you can play Spotify in the background as you're playing games and control your playlist from your phone.
It's fantastic.
It's really good.
Yep. So you don't have to jump out of your game to control your playlist. You just use your phone to remote control Spotify on your PS4. It works great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. All right, so I also played a very, very little bit of Soma.
Oh, yeah.
Just getting into that. Just started playing it today and then ran out of time to do so because it turned out I needed to eat. But... yeah, I hadn't had foodstuffs today and felt like that would be important. But so Soma, if you're unaware, is the new game from Frictional Games that made Amnesia: The Dark Descent. It is. I gotta be honest. I'm kind of a pussy when it comes to horror games. Like I'm easily freaked out by them, and I'm not crazy about kind of jump scare games.
Yeah.
And so I've been playing Soma, and it seems a little deeper than that. And it, like, it starts off with a Philip K. Dick quote.
Nice.
And it's the quote, I'm paraphrasing, I'm probably going to butcher it, but it's the idea of reality is the thing that even if you deny it, still exists. Yeah. Something like that. And that's where the game starts, and very early on, you're playing a guy who's going to get a brain scan following a car accident that you determine from kind of contextual clues in the apartment you wake up in, that his wife or girlfriend, I can't remember, girlfriend, I think, has died in this car accident, but he doesn't seem to have a clear recollection of that. And even in conversations with, like, a guy that you work with, you refer to her, or the character that you're playing refers to her as if she's still alive. And the guy on the phone kind of uncomfortably is like, yeah, okay, well, we're going to get somebody to cover her shift anyway.
Nice. I've heard kind of the highlight of this game is that the story is really good.
Yeah, and okay. you know, and I'm not giving away spoilers. This is okay. All first 30 minutes of the game. But yeah, you go to a clinic that is, in theory, where you're going to get this scan done. But when you get there, there's no one really there except the guy doing the scan. And so there are a lot of questions in my mind of, like, how much of this that you're seeing is actually real. And then when you go to do the scan, something happens and you wake up and you're in this undersea thing. And you don't know how you got there. You don't know what's going on. There's a lot of weird shit that you run into in the rooms that's starting to tell the story of the game. And so, yeah, the thing that kind of piqued my interest about it, aside from it just being a horror game and not, from what I understand, totally reliant on jump scares, you know, because I'm a fan of stuff like, you know, I Have No Mouth and I'm a Scream.
Scream,
and,
yeah.
You know, System Shock and stuff like that. And it has a very System Shock 2 kind of feel to it.
It's first person?
It is first person. It's a pretty looking game. And yeah, so far I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to getting into it and knowing that it's only like a 9 or 10 hour game.
Are you playing that on PS4 or?
I'm playing that on the PC.
Okay, cool.
So, but yeah, I'll report back and let you know what I think more of that game. But I've enjoyed it, and it's a game that I'm kind of looking forward to, kind of playing with the girlfriend a little bit, so I can be like, I'm not alone in the room, and I can pretend to be not as much of a puss as I am when playing these games.
Witness me.
Right.
I can do Mad Max references now.
yeah, so that seems cool. I'm looking forward to getting deeper into that. The game I really want to talk about, though, is a game that is in alpha, I want to say, maybe beta, but it is a free download right now. I will also put the link in the show notes. It is a game called the Westport Independent. And it is, you guys are both going to love the comparison I'm about to make.
All right.
It reminds me a whole lot of Papers, Please.
Nice. Uh-huh.
It is a game in which you are the editor of a paper in a totalitarian state. And in a week's time, the government is going to shut down any newspapers that are considered a threat to the public good. So your job in the game is to go through the news reports on your desk to choose which ones go into the paper and to edit those stories. Like, you're given a block of like 3 or 4 basic, you know, thesis statements of what this article is about. And you can deselect parts of the article to print. So if it's like, hey, there was a riot in this district and the police overreacted and hurt a bunch of people, you can just print the fact that there was a riot, but not the fact that the police reacted badly.
You're Winston in 1984.
Yes. Yes.
That's fucking cool.
And you're also assigning these news articles to reporters on your staff, and those reporters have leanings either pro-government or anti-government. And right now the game feels very unfinished. You know, like I played through the week a couple of times and just tried different ways to kind of screw with, like, do nothing but print entertainment stuff, so that the government doesn't shut you down. And then conversely doing a playthrough where it's like, I'm just going to print all the stuff that's anti-government, and like your employees will eventually like quit if they disagree with the articles and the direction that the paper is headed and stuff like that. So it's interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this thing comes out, because I do love Papers, Please oh so very much.
Yeah, it's got like kind of that sepia tone vibe to it here.
Looks very much like you could play both of those like side by side, and it would almost feel like they were from the same creator, although I don't believe that's the case. In fact, I would be willing to bet.
Yeah. And it's downloaded.
Yeah. So, yeah, give it a go. And, you know, if you like Papers, Please, or just want to, you know.
I don't like Papers, Please. I experience it.
Yeah, this feels a little less bleak in a lot of ways than Papers, Please. It feels a little more gamey, because there are also things where you're, like, adjusting the content of the paper and distribution of the paper to certain districts to appeal to the readers of that district to raise circulation. And the interesting thing to me is if they build it out in the game where you can like incite a rebellion, if your paper is popular enough and you're printing the right things, can you change the outcome of the game that drastically?
That's cool.
You know, where you can ostensibly take down the government. I would like to see something like that, as opposed to just one, you know, one failure state or another.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's there is interesting enough that it's encouraging to think what might come after.
I like games like this in the same way that, I can't even think of what to compare it to. Like, Papers, Please, like you said, it's less bleak than that, but it was, I can't even think of how to frame it. I like the... It reminds me of, like, the Oregon Trail. Like, I didn't enjoy playing that game, but it was still always, like, pleasing in a way when somebody dies of dysentery. Like, and in Papers, died. Please, like, Papers, Please has got that exact same vibe to it, where it's like, oh, you just worked hard and you just turned away all these people that you know are going to go fucking die in a gutter somewhere, and your daughter just died because you didn't have enough money. Food.
Yeah.
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 It's got, and it's the same, it's that, you know, I mean, I think Oregon Trail originated that style of, yeah, right. Your life sucks right now.
Right, where there's almost no win state. It's just one failure state or another, you know, it's like you can fail the least.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, everyone is still going to be miserable and go home hungry, you know.
Yep. Oh, you guys forded the river, but Ma and Johnny both drowned.
Yeah, you guys obviously never were bankers from Boston, because you just load that shit up at the beginning.
Rocked it out. Made it all over. Yeah, no problem. We got here in like 14 days.
Yep. Just keep throwing money at those problems until they go away.
Want to hunt? No, I want to buy food.
and honestly, every time Ma got swept away, there was part of me that was like, you know, she was probably asking for it.
She wasn't going to make it. We all knew she wasn't going to make it.
She was past childbearing years. What purpose was she going to serve on the West Coast anyway? Yeah, we don't need her. In fact, if she dies, we should cook and eat her. Is probably what should happen. That should be an option. And cannibalism in Oregon Trail is the one thing that was missing from that game, I feel.
Donner Pass? Yes. No.
Right.
Yes. We're going Donner.
Johnny now has Kuduru. the cannibalism shakes, they call it.
Yeah, which you can get in DayZ.
Oh, nice.
Really?
Yeah, nice. So you can eat you can kill people and eat people in DayZ, and it gives you the shakes.
Nice.
It's wild.
Yeah,
weird wild stuff.
It's weird wild stuff.
Yeah, I like the fact that games have reached a point where cannibalism and the viral outcome of that has become a game state.
You know? Give me more of that.
Yeah, there should just be a cannibalism simulator.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's going to be the official Shotcast game. Cannibalism simulator.
Hosted by Donald Trump.
Yeah, there you go.
It's the tastiest long pork I've ever had.
You're going to eat so many people, you're going to think, I can't even eat another person. It's going to be so beautiful. It's going to be beautifully prepared.
You got to get you a Trump-branded person. It's the top-notch, best long pork you're ever going to have.
I've always liked long pork.
Trump burned right in the ass. Branded. Trump.
Yeah. Trump seal of approval. Long pork has always been like a great descriptor that most people don't know.
Yeah.
And if
favorite name for human meat, long pork.
I always like to, if someone asks me what I like on a pizza, I always throw out long pork.
What? What's that?
I'll see if they got it.
It's like bacon.
Yeah, it's delicious. You need to try it at least once, but don't be sure you thoroughly cook it or you get the shakes. Actually, I think that's a prion disease. I think even if you cook it right,
yeah,
it's yeah. That's
so honest.
It's the price you pay.
Yeah. If you wanna swallow the soul of another and take in their power,
that's right.
Kuru is one of the things you risk in that.
It's worth it.
And that, by the way, just as a Shotcast tip of the day, totally true. If you kill and consume another person, you steal their power. That's right. Science.
That's how I got my current
job. Just a fact.
Yeah, just an undeniable fact of nature. All right.
That's cool. The Westport Independent, eh?
Yes. So you can download that for free right now, and it is
0010.com.
All right. That's where there I found you go. It anyway. Yeah, it's worth a look, and it doesn't take too much of your time to give it a shot and see what you think, especially if you like Papers, Please and or other cannibalism simulators. This has no cannibalism in it that I'm aware of. How about some news?
Can do that.
All right. Johnny Dolan.
You break out the news.
You are officially the news guy.
Strange. I like the story about composer Marty O'Donnell won his legal battle against Bungie over all of the music that he wrote for Halo, and they fired him a while ago, and he took him to court because they were still using a lot of music that he made while he worked there, and they basically had to hire him back because the court said so and give him a bunch of money.
Yeah, he's, well, not hiring back in a composer capacity.
But they gave him shares back in the company, which he...
Right.
Yeah, so he... I can't remember where I read it, but somebody's like, that's going to be, like, the most awkward board meeting. Hey, you're back after we tried to fuck you out of all your rights.
Hey, here's $100,000, and you're back.
And, yeah. So, interesting story. That's... And I totally didn't think it was going to go that way, because it was like, yeah, I mean, you think about, he composed this music while an employee of Bungie, and then they fire you. Like, there's artists and programmers get, you know, there's some weird rules that go along with that kind of stuff where, you know, what ownership do you have if you were being paid to do that under the guise of for this corporation. So I was kind of surprised that he ended up coming out of it. I don't know, like, a lot of the you know, intricate details of it, but there must have been something contractually going on where they were denying him something that they had promised him in writing. So
my understanding was it was the vacation thing that was, like, they weren't going to give him his vacation pay, even though it was contractually owed to him. And that whole situation, like, I've read a couple of articles about it, including one from his lawyer.
Okay.
kind of outlining, like, hey, this is what happened to, you know, my friend who, you know, and it was a very one-sided kind of look at the situation and all, but, yeah, it sounded like there was definitely some bad blood going on from early goings in that game.
Yeah.
So, as well as some issues with, like, I think he wanted to do a soundtrack for the game and they didn't want to put it out. And,
yeah, there was some ownership question. Whose is this?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, like, there was some murky contracts going on between them and him, so who knows? Some lawyer somewhere wrote a not clearly worded contract on that subject, so. We mentioned it briefly earlier, but NVIDIA's GeForce has the new game-sharing feature, which is in beta. You can only try it out if you download the beta version of the GeForce software.
Right. If you have GeForce experience, you just pop into the properties and checkbox the I want to be a part or I want to upgrade to betas, and it downloads and you got it.
Have you, because you were saying earlier that it took away some of your recording options, right?
Yeah, but...
Can you un-opt out and then get those back?
I mean, if you opt out, you go back to the other version. One thing I really do like is... We're all familiar with, like, the Steam overlay.
Yeah.
So when you get this beta version, if you hit Alt-Z, you get a GeForce Experience overlay.
Okay.
So, you know, it was, like, before... And you still have hotkeys to turn things on and off, but, you know, if you're in the middle of the game, you can just hit Alt-Z, and you can turn on your Twitch streaming. Or you can do any other thing. They also added where you can edit your clips, if you do like the shadow play where it's like, oh, well, keep the last 20 minutes of my gameplay going or the last 5 minutes, you can just in their own interface edit that stuff, upload it straight to YouTube, which nice. I think is awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
Kind of like the share button.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It seems like they're kind of taking a lot of cues from what PlayStation has done.
Yeah.
So.
I haven't checked out. Does that allow for local recording as well?
Yes. Or
is it, okay. That honestly, that's my biggest problem with Twitch of late, is ever since they kind of changed their policy on the way that they archive that video, it has made it incredibly difficult to take the video that you stream to Twitch and then, you know, turn around and do any kind of editing or audio overlay or whatever. Like, at a certain point, it feels like that video has become their property.
Yeah.
Even though you're the one creating it, and I mean, yes, they're the distribution channel, but yeah, it's really, really kind of a bummer, because doing some of the PS4 streams, it's been real difficult to actually get that video in a state where I can do a little bit of editing, because, you know, you don't want to put up all the shit that happens in between sometimes. So
I actually was going to the lengths of just going to Twitch after recording, immediately hitting the, you know, just upload this to YouTube, and so it'll be there tomorrow, and then downloading it from YouTube.
Yeah. That's about all you can do at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of steps. So, and then you start bumping up against bandwidth caps. Which
we hate.
Yeah, because you streamed it out once, then you're downloading it a second time, and then you got to re-upload it after it's edited, so you're sending the same, you know, chunk of video across three times. Although, I do got to give somewhat of a shout out to YouTube's built-in editor is actually all right. It's not, you know, super intuitive. It's not, you know, entirely responsive all the time because you're doing it through a web page, but it's serviceable. You can get in there and do some basic edits. Let me just run through a couple more of these here. Yeah, I know. No Man's Sky developer, what's his name? Sean Murray is going to be on Stephen Colbert's Late Show on Friday, October 2nd, talking about No Man's Sky.
Yeah, you know, hey, been talking about it for a long time.
Yeah.
seeing a good bit of gameplay. Let me play this game already, man.
I know.
Yeah, let's do this now.
Let's just...
the level of marketing that this thing is starting to, like, the hype and the ramp up to this is starting to make me a little nervous.
Yeah.
A lot of money into saying, hey, look at this crazy game, to the point where it's like, when the game that I want to play is going to be like on Good Morning America or something, I'm like, oh, No. Please let this not be terrible. Interesting.
This may be in the news. I'm not sure because I haven't learned to read, but did you see the Netflix app? And more importantly, did you see the John Carmack article about the logistics of the Netflix app on the Oculus and how it works?
No.
Oh, it's sweet.
I can imagine it's some real high level stuff though, because I follow him on Twitter and about 99% of the things he tweets goes right over my head.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the article that came out where it was him detailing like here's how the app works, and it is nothing but just like, you know, electronic schema and here's the tri-layer design of the app and that kind of thing. And most of it I was just like, I might as well have just been hitting myself in the head with a shoe while I was reading it the whole time. But there was enough stuff in there that I caught that I was like, oh, wow. You know, not only is John Carmack a super smart individual, this sounds like a really cool app. And I think it's out. And I just downloaded the new SDK for the Oculus and the new runtime environment for it. And as a result, a lot of the old apps that I was using don't work anymore. So I'm kind of back to start in a lot of ways with the DK2.
Yeah, I did see the article where they're like starting to say, yeah, this thing's going to cost like $300 when it comes out.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm totally prepared for that.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to buy that. I'm going to buy the PlayStation VR 2, and that's probably going to be the same price. I don't care.
Yeah,
you know that I want them both to be awesome, and the stuff that came out of Oculus Kinect, some of the game stuff that came out of there, I thought looked really, really interesting.
Did you see that what's it called, Bullet Train?
Yeah. Yes,
is that what it's called? The one from Epic. Oh my god, yep. That looks crazy.
Yep, it looks like an on-rail shooter, but that's fine.
But it looked really good.
It did look really good, and when you're in that. It's the problem that we've talked about on this show before, and it has been talked about in the past. You can't convince someone how cool VR is until you strap it on.
Yeah.
And once you do and see what like the DK and DK2 are capable of, and that the consumer version is going to be better than that, then you're just like, okay, this is it. We're, you know, like I said, we're one dick sleeve away from losing about 30% of our country.
Say much like a strap-on, you can't convince people how great it is until you strap
on. You gotta try it though,
right? Like you can show someone anal beads, but until you have plucked them delicately from their rectum,
I understand that the term butt plug does not sound pleasant. You just gotta try.
You just put it in and then tell me you don't like it. It's like convincing a kid to eat asparagus. No, just try eat one bite, and then you tell me you don't like it. But don't tell me you don't like it before you ever put that butt plug in. I mean, asparagus. Why am I talking to my child about this?
Put down mommy's butt plug. Put that back where you found it.
Yeah, if you want to use one, use daddy's.
Yeah. Daddy washes his.
Yeah, I. Mommy's dirty in more ways than one.
Good stuff. I was going to read this one, but I'm just going to read the title and then move on. The new Hitman game has been delayed to 2016. I'm like,
eh.
All right.
I don't care anymore. Yeah, I played Metal Gear Solid now. I know what stealth is supposed to be like. So,
wasn't that the one? No, it was trying to think if that's the one where they said that, oh, if you gave us X number of money, it would come out sooner, but that's the...
No, that's the DSX. Yeah. And that, I've heard nothing about that since they did that, so yeah, whatever. Kickstarter is going to be changing to a... Let me make sure I read this right. A... What do they call it? They're changing their charter to a public benefit corporation. Which the best description I've read for it is that it lies between your basic corporation and a nonprofit, kind of somewhere in between. And the idea behind it is that they have by declaring themselves as a public benefit corporation, they have a legal obligation to perform social goods that are a benefit to society. So the easiest thing to wrap your head around for that is that they will be donating 5% of their after-tax profit towards arts and music education, which is kind of a nice story.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, it part of qualifying yourself as a public benefit is that you kind of have to write up basically like a mission statement for your company in which you pledge to do things like there specifically says they don't. I'll read some quotes here. Defend the privacy rights and personal data of the people who use the service. Not lobby or campaign for public policies unless they align with its mission and values, regardless of possible economic benefits to the company. And the one that I like was prohibits the use of loopholes or other esoteric but legal tax management strategies to reduce its tax burden. So basically, be an ethical corporation is what this means. So they didn't have to do this. I think it's kind of interesting that they went down this road.
Yeah, but Kickstarter's been such a phenomenal success. I mean, it's nice to see that the people running the show there seem to want to give something back and to present themselves as a benevolent and kind ruler.
Yeah, I mean, I think they realized that, like, Kickstarter, to me, could just very easily be like, you know, a MySpace where you get greedy or you don't, you know, treat your, you know, your users right, and you go the wrong way down the fork in the road, and then you don't exist in 3 years. So they seem to be like have the long view going here. So it's good to see.
Then Justin Timberlake buys.
Yeah, there you go. I thought this was kind of cool because we've streamed DayZ and stuff from time to time, but Rust has added an anti-stream sniping mechanic to their game where it goes in and actually anonymizes screen names. So, like, if you're playing with a group of guys, like, and you happen to, like, you know, tab out to your server browser or, you know, character names are popping up above people's heads or whatnot in the game, the software that they've built in actually just, like, randomly replaces that with other words and things so people can't see what server you're on and come kill you or, you know, come hunt you down and stream snipe you, basically. I thought that was kind of a cool idea.
That is a very good idea.
Yeah. I mean, because I remember, like, when DayZ was first getting real popular and Dean Hall would actually get on was playing. And within, like, 15 minutes, there were people, like... And it was bad because people were hacking the shit out of his game, but like helicopters were crashing into him and they just kept coming out of everywhere. And, you know, like five guys would show up on motorcycles. And, you know, if anybody's ever played DayZ before, it takes a long time to get a helicopter in that game. And like the minute they started broadcasting live, all of a sudden people started showing up out of everywhere with vehicles and stream sniping it. It was hilarious. But yeah, that's a really cool option for those style games, especially when it's something like a DayZ or Rust, where when you die, it fucking means something. So,
yeah, yeah, I think the two big problems with those kind of open world games, especially PC based, are that and hacking. Yeah. If you can eliminate those two problems, then
and more so for me, hacking, because that just absolutely ruined the DayZ mod for me.
It ruined my Arma 2 experience with the amount of times that I got banned combating someone who was trying to hack the server.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I lost my Arma 2 license for DayZ because we had bought a hack so that we could anti-hack hackers on the server that we were paying money to run, you know. And then I got my key got banned because I was technically hacking, but it was like the only thing you could do to keep hackers off your server. So they need to work that shit out. Otherwise those games will just never work. The all time Donkey Kong world record was beaten twice in the same day.
Can I just say fuck Billy Mitchell?
Yeah, fuck that guy.
with a strap on and anal beads.
Yep. It was Wes Copeland registered a score of 1,170,500. Whoa. Goddamn streaming ads. Fucking shit. Sorry.
I will say, if you haven't watched his record-breaking attempt, at least the latter portion of it, it's really awesome.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously been playing the game for a long time, and there he's like yelling at the Donkey Kong, the mechanics of Donkey Kong, where you can sort of manipulate how the barrels go by moving your character at different points, and yeah. He's like, "Don't fucking do this to me right now! Don't fucking do this to me!" You know, like he's like so like on edge, and it's really kind of fun to watch. I King of Kong is one of my favorite documentaries.
Yep.
It's such a fun movie to watch. I have a shirt that says there's a guy in King of Kong named Brian Koo who runs around saying, "There's a Donkey Kong kill screen coming up if anyone's interested." I have a fucking shirt of this dude because it's just like one of my favorite movies.
Because no one's interested.
Yeah, at all. And
my favorite part of that whole movie was when Billy Mitchell is just being a total cock.
The whole movie.
But it's like the pinnacle of him being just an ass, and he's like, "Well, that's why I wear this tie every day, because blah 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 America," and the guy's like, "What tie?" And he looks down and he's not wearing the America tie that he'd been wearing like the entire movie, and he's like, "Oh, I guess I didn't wear it today." Such an asshole.
I think my favorite thing with him, he's like, "You know what initials I use? USA."
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, God.
Yeah, it's like, because America's number one or some shit like that.
He's just the biggest dick ever on the
planet. That documentary has such great clear-cut heroes and villains.
Oh, yeah.
It's really satisfying to watch. It's a great, great movie.
Yeah. I, went out of my way to friend Steve Wiebe on Facebook. Like, not his, fan page, but, found his personal page. And nice. Somehow he accepted my friend request.
Nice.
Yeah.
So this guy set the score, and then 6 hours later, what's his name? Robbie Lakeman came in and beat him by about 2,000 points. So the guy was the best at Donkey Kong for about 6 hours. So that's got to really suck.
Yeah. But it's still cooler than anything I'll ever do.
Yeah, yeah, seriously. I mean, yeah, I had the world record in Donkey Kong. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you have it now? No. Just like a whole bunch of other people that don't have it anymore either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I also didn't go to the moon, but there were plenty of people who did that. Yeah. So fuck you. Who are you to judge?
Let's see. I wanted to ask you about this, Justin. The Arma 3's 3D editor has a public beta. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I watched. They did a live stream on it before that beta came out. They have a 2D editor that's existed forever.
It's just like the top-down map, and you can place
things
in that view, right?
And then they have Zeus mode, which is sort of like a live mission editor. And it's kind of a hybrid of those two where you can make a mission, place objects. They've refined how you place objects, and it's easier to, beforehand, placing a person on the second story of a building was, a nightmare.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier now.
You're basically in the game editing in 3D.
Exactly. Okay. And at any point, you can just hop into the game and start playing it and take different perspectives, different characters, and start playing as them. That's the learning curve on making missions in Arma 3 has always been, or Arma in general has been, the thing that's kept me away from really, even just making a mission. That they use this SQF language or file system type thing where that's what everything's packed into. I mean, we ran the DAISY server. I got into that where we were trying to add mods. There's we could add snow, and you have to get in these SQF files and change all this different stuff. But it seems like they're really putting a foot forward to try and lower the bar for getting in, making missions.
Yeah, this is basically just a proper editor.
Yeah. And people are gonna do wild stuff. They're already I think in that article they're can't wait for someone to recreate Camp Omega from Metal Gear Ground Zeroes.
Nice.
You're going to see some wild stuff. There's already in Arma 3, there's Hitman missions from Hitman games that people have made and different things like that, which is awesome.
Cool. Did you play any Rainbow Six Siege?
I played about two or three matches.
There's a open beta. Is it still going on or is it done?
They just extended it till the end of, I don't know if it's next month or just this month, but you know, it, honestly, it's pretty fun.
I mean, it reminded me a lot of, I love Rainbow Six Vegas, and it had a lot of that going on.
I go way back on some Rainbow Six, like, I mean, some Rainbow Six 3, like, where you get to plan your missions out beforehand and all this stuff. And it's not quite like that. The levels are, they have this destructibility to them where, you know, you can, once you get inside a building, you can start shooting through walls and take guys out, which is really awesome. You know, the basic game mode is there's an attacker team, a defender team. Defender team picks a room where a bomb is planted, essentially, and the attackers have to go defuse this bomb. So at the beginning of the match, you have a voting system. And so it's, there's some sort of, you know, there's a little bit of randomness to it where some, you know, someone might not vote the way you want to go, and then you're stuck defending this area, but then you barricade these rooms and, you know, you're essentially waiting out the attackers to come in. I think it's going to be really cool for sports type stuff, as long as it's, you know, a consistent game and it's, you know, they really, you know, they work out the bugs that are in it.
The destructibility of it looks like it's kind of the real showcase.
It's honestly a lot of fun. I thought at first that it really wouldn't hold my attention for very long because it is so much like just a piece of a bigger game to me. It's really kind of what it seems like. There could be a whole like Rainbow Six game and this could be one tiny little multiplayer mode, honestly. But they've really sunk all their money into this is what the game is. Like, in the past, Rainbow Six is about these real long missions that you plan out, at least to me. I never really played Vegas or those ones. I played the ones before that. But I don't know. I think people are really going to gravitate towards this when it actually comes out. I think it'll take people away from something like a Battlefield or something like a Call of Duty. I think you'll see a lot of people like that who really want to start playing it because... And not really that, like, the gunfighting is... The great thing about it is that you can't really fight your way out of a lot of situations, like in a Call of Duty or Battlefield, where if you're really good at shooting, you can kill a bunch of dudes. It's really about how you barricade these rooms and where you position yourself in these, you know, smaller environments, and working together as a team. And I think that's becoming a bigger thing in games like this.
You know? Yeah, it looks cool.
It's going to be, it's a lot of fun, and once it comes out, I think we'll probably end up playing it.
I just feel like that's such a crowded space right now, that sort of, you know, co-op, shooter, online, multiplayer sort of deal. You know, like Titanfall is a good example of...
That one came out and just fell flat.
I mean, that was a new IP. Rainbow Six has some name recognition for sure, and, you know, we all enjoyed Rainbow Six Vegas quite a bit. But I don't know. I mean, I can't get that excited about playing one of those right now. Like, it would have to do something really revolutionary for me to feel like this is going to be worth the time when I could be playing a Fallout 4. Not that that's going to be revolutionary, but that game's going to rock.
I did see a video. It was an animated GIF of a guy hanging from a rappel rope upside down on the side of a building. He planted a shaped charge on the wall, jumped out, pushed himself out away from the wall on his rappelling rope while inverting back to being upright while detonating the shaped charge, swung in through the wall, and then shot a couple of guys in the head that were on the other side of the wall. That seems pretty cool.
It's a pretty cool moment. I will say,
pretty sweet.
Unlike a Battlefield, unlike a Call of Duty, very much in line with a lot of other games you're seeing, it is 4v4. Or 5v5. So it's, you know, it is limiting. You're playing these different rounds, and the rounds they tend to be pretty short because once the shit hits the fan, you know, everyone kind of dies. You know, you're...
And that was like Rainbow Six Vegas had a pretty fun multiplayer mode that was kind of it. Like you'd end up, the only downside to that one was you'd end up with like two guys, one on each team left alive, and they would be running around the map looking for each other, but they were running, they were both like running clockwise and time would, because they'd never find each other. So and you had that problem.
A cool thing about it is that even after you're dead, in all these levels, there are security cameras. And if the enemy doesn't take those cameras out, you can cycle through these cameras and actually mark enemies for your teammates that are still alive.
Nice.
So you can talk to people who, while you're dead, you can talk to them, you know, that are actually still in the game, which may or may not be a thing once people start doing competitive, which it kind of gives people an edge. But I don't know, it keeps you interested after you die, which is a big, you know, turn off for a lot of games, like in an Arma or something like that, where like you die and you're just like waiting for everyone else to die to start over.
Yeah. Speaking of crowded space, Star Wars Battlefront has an open beta starting on October 8th through the 12th, which is awesome because I'll be on vacation and nowhere near a computer to try it.
that kind of stinks because I'm in the same boat where like that weekend's super busy for me and there's no way I'm going to be able to touch it, but I'm real curious about it.
Yep, I'm going to be in Virginia Beach by the ocean, and you know, I'd rather be there than playing the Battlefront beta, to be honest. So
that's not on PC though; it's probably on
PS4. I thought it was everywhere. I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah.
I may volunteer as tribute on that one, even though I'm really not interested in that game.
Download it under the demo and beta section of the Origin store. So I'm assuming that's PC.
Yep, that's what it is. All right. Open Origin.
Yeah. I'll have to reinstall it in Windows 10.
Right.
Not in there right now.
Whatever the computer equivalent of blowing the cobwebs off of a program is, that's what I'd have to do to fire up Origin at this point.
And there's games that I own in Origin that I don't own in Steam, but I don't play them because they're in Origin. Yeah. That's an unfortunate thing. No, we'll get into just some minor Metal Gear Solid news here. I alluded earlier to the failure spectrum that we were talking about, where you can be playing stealth and kind of get in some shit and still work your way back out of it. I won't go too deep other than to say there's an interesting article written by Tom Francis, who's the guy who programmed Gunpoint, which is a pretty cool game. He's working on a new one. I forget what it's called. Heat Signature, I think it's called.
It's the space game?
Yeah. But he used to work for PC Gamer as a writer, and he's been on his own blog writing a pretty interesting series of articles about his experiences with Metal Gear Solid 5. And PC Gamer has been also publishing them on their site, and he just wrote an article called Metal Gear Solid's Failure Spectrum. And if you look that up on PC Gamer, he kind of just like has some interesting viewpoints about, you know, you can do this, but then if you fuck that up, then you do this. And then you finally get to the failure state, which is you've been shot a bunch of times. There's guys all around you and now you're totally fucked. And so I was playing earlier today. I played a little bit and I got into a village and snuck my way in there. I was doing really good and then got spotted and didn't know where the guy saw me from. And so I just took off running and then got spotted by another guy. And then like fucking sirens started going off and I jumped down a few cliffs and like was hiding underneath like a deck hanging off of this building. And I thought, all right, I'll just wait it out here. And the threat level started going down and the threat level went down a little bit more and they went into search mode. And I'm like looking around and I see through the boards on this deck that I'm hiding under that all of these guys are slowly walking down. And I'm like, fuck, they're going to walk right by where I am. And I'm just sitting there waiting. And I'm like, well, maybe only one of them will come and I can, you know, grab him and choke him out. And so I had worked the failure state down enough to where they like walked down the stairs and they stopped. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sweet. They're going to turn around. And then four guys all right together started walking towards me. And I was in the game. I was on my stun pistol and I was ready to grab a guy and like pop out and maybe shoot another guy. But then when it was four guys, I got it on video. I'll have to upload this clip. I just, I like instinctively just switched over to my machine gun, popped around the corner, and just aimed like chest high and just unloaded an entire clip through like this column of four guys and wiped them all out. And then I had to take off running because I had just like reinvigorated the fail state again. So very cool article about kind of how what a spectrum it really is and what you can kind of do with it and get away with. It's he's got another couple of articles he's written about it as well. So if you're into Metal Gear, Tom Francis is kind of doing like a deep dive analysis into the mechanics of it, which is cool. And he's a developer as well, so he's kind of got an interesting take on it. In more Metal Gear news, there Konami has said
the company that doesn't make video games anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. No DLC, no story DLC for Metal Gear Solid, no plans.
Which is some sadness.
Wah, wah. Yeah, exactly. Like, this game could basically print money for you, and you're just like, yeah, fuck this.
Well, they've got the microtransactions, right? Can't you?
Yeah, but there's no... like, that's for the forward operating bases feature, and all that does is it, like, upgrades your... I don't know. It doesn't sound like it's gonna get any traction to me, like...
Look, I'm 40 hours into it. You're 20-ish hours into it.
Yep.
Neither one of us have even hit the FOB stuff.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten to it yet.
Yeah, it's like...
so much game here without that they're, like, by the time you get to it, you're probably going to be tired of playing this game. So, I don't know how much... Yeah.
The thing that makes me sad about the Metal Gear Solid, the DLC stuff, is that from the little bit I've read, and I try not to read much about... When an article is like, this is about the story of Metal Gear Solid, I'm like, I don't, you know,
yeah.
I haven't got there yet. But there seems to be this idea that at some point, Kojima might have been taken off the game. They tried to finish it, and everything sort of ends very abruptly.
Yeah.
And that there may be another act to the game that really never got realized.
Yeah.
And, you know... Naomi's got their plan for whatever they're going to do, but I really, if that's what it is, I hate that what I feel like is the best Metal Gear game is getting sold short, essentially.
Yeah, like they had a real opportunity to, like, you know, make one of those games where people are like, ah, Metal Gear Solid 5, remember that shit? And...
but it sounds like that's where the game is already. It just may not be fully realized.
Like, if you get into and you start reading some articles about it, and when you play it and you don't mind, you know, kind of having a few things spoiled here and there, like a lot of the people who are really saying, yes, this is a great game, are also saying, but there's so many things wrong with it. Like, there's, you know, some missed opportunities, and this part of it's kind of stupid, but the rest of it's so good that you are forgiving many of the faults that it has. So it's... seems like, and a lot of the criticisms I've read about it and heard about it are just what Justin's saying, where it's like, this seems unfinished. So there's that. Nice going, Konami. Read an article just today about Cloud Imperium Games saying, no, we're not laying off people, we're just restructuring.
Yeah. they've heard that before.
Yeah, so Star Citizen continues to go around and around on its crazy little ride.
It's still fascinating. Like, I'm continually intrigued. It's almost the Donald Trump of video games for me at this point. I'm just like, I don't expect anything productive to come of this.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a bizarre and unexpected turn in, you know, video game manufacturing or production.
Yeah.
That I'm just, I just kind of want to see where this thing shakes out. I don't even care if the game comes out at this point. I just, like, even if just one day they're like, you know what, we couldn't do it.
Yeah.
We really tried, but it didn't come together.
I was having that exact same thought when I was reading this article. Like, I really liked Elite Dangerous, and I played, you know, probably 40, 50 hours of it. And, you know, I've tried all the stuff for Star Citizen that's come out, and then I've just kind of, like, had to step away from it. But when both of those games were announced and they were coming out, I was, like, super excited because I hadn't played, like, a space, you know, kind of privateer-style game in a long time, and was totally jazzed. And then ever since then, it's kind of been like, oh, well, Elite Dangerous is pretty shallow, and, you know, they're going to maybe add these things to it. But they've been really secretive about what's going on, and then Star Citizen has, like, this, you know, very open development track going on. but like every piece of news that I hear about it is just like, ugh. Okay, well, I'm becoming less and less excited about this. You know, I really wanted these things to come out and be good, but then it's just one kind of small piece of bad news after another is just kind of wearing out my enthusiasm, I think.
Well, yeah, and also just the fact that it's taken so damn long for this thing to come out.
Yeah, and I'm trying to, like, not let that be my thing that's getting me down because it's like, I mean, what they're talking about is going to take a long time. Like, I think about Fallout, you know, when the hell did the New Vegas come out? It was like 4 or 5 years ago. So it takes a while to make something that's this massive, but so I'm trying to not let that be what's getting me down, but it's all the inner turmoil and I don't know, something about
right, it. Right. At a certain point, you just rake in so much money and the ambition exceeds. You can pay for the project at this point,
yeah.
But maybe the scope of it has gotten so big that,
yeah.
You know, it's like doing a 1-to-1 scale model of Manhattan. Like, you could probably do that,
yeah.
But at a certain point, just the sheer practicality of it collapses in on itself.
Are you comparing Star Citizen to Schenectady?
Yeah.
Schenectady is maybe my favorite name of any city in the world.
Oh, man. What else I got here? We were talking about Twitch earlier. I did see something just today, too, that they announced that they're doing direct upload. Like, they're starting to turn themselves into YouTube, apparently, where you can directly upload videos straight to Twitch. And I don't know exactly how that affects what we were complaining about earlier with their storage. But it seems like they may be kind of going more of a YouTube path now that YouTube has announced their gaming version of their channels, where, you know, it's going to be more of a repository for video instead of upload this to YouTube from Twitch. They're just going to have all that stuff locally now. So seems interesting. It was like a very top level article that didn't get too deep into it, but it was just some new fresh announcement they just had today.
Speaking of fresh announcements, do you see that Fallout 4 is not going to have any platform exclusive DLC?
Really?
Yeah. Just an FYI. No matter what platform you get it on, you'll be able to. I don't know if there's any timing or anything that might come into play there. Because I could see where, like, you know, if you get it on Xbox, you get this DLC a week early or whatever. But
yeah,
you know, they have announced that. No matter where you get it, you're going to be able to get everything.
You're going
to
be playing the game no matter where you play it.
Yep.
Good for them. Bethesda continues to be one of my favorite developers.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of hot new news, TBS is going to air CSGO tournaments.
Oh, my God. It's happening. Yeah,
it's happening. It is literally happening.
Oh. It's going to be what saves ESPN. It's going to go all MLG.
All video game, yeah. Hearthstone, we got your CSGO.
Yep. Dota.
Yeah.
Dota at 7 o'clock every night on ESPN.
I know I had also thrown over the new DayZ announcement.
Yes.
They did the TwitchCon finally saying the little bird, the MH6, is going to be in, which is
the most fun helicopter to fly in that entire game.
The most fun helicopter, like, hands down. Like,
yeah.
Just such a fun thing in Arma, outside of Arma. I really, one of the best comments on Reddit was someone just did you can do, like, remind me !! On Reddit, and then you'll get a message. When you, like, remind me !! 6 months, and then you get a message that links you back to that. Someone was like, remind me in a year. Like, sure, yeah, the helicopters are going to be in there. Yeah. Tell me, you know, we'll come back in a year and see if they're actually there. So, I mean, we'll see how that goes. They're talking about doing infected areas as well. So some of the cities, you'll need a gas mask or, like, a hazmat suit to go into.
Yeah.
Or else you risk, you know, contracting some sort of disease.
I really want that game to wow me again. Like, that's one of the last games that, you know, kind of like came out of nowhere and really surprised me with how awesome it was the mod for DayZ, because it was just totally new and fun. And I really hope that they're not going to suffer from like the thing I think Star Citizen is going through, where they just keep adding shit and it just never gets done. But it seems like DayZ is finally starting to, like, they're talking about like a feature complete betas coming out this year, which I don't think sounds possible, but
Early next year. I know they're testing the new renderer, so that's like the big thing, is they're still using old parts of the engine, and they basically are building this new engine, and essentially all the frame rate issues that everyone always talks about, once this new renderer is in, it's time to test it and refine it, gonna make it where, like, you know, when I upgraded my new PC and I played on like a server where nobody was on, the woods, and I'm getting 60 frames solid. You know, hopefully that's that's the benchmark they're going for, is that everyone's going to be able to get solid frames outside of a city, inside of a city, and that it's going to become like a real game at that point, as opposed to this.
I hope so, man. I really like that game, so.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it were just as good as the mod. You know, I know I keep banging that drum, but the mod was really cool. The standalone game has never been as good as the mod that it sprang from.
Nice. I'll just end on what I think is kind of a stupid, funny story. After years and years and numerous iterations of Grand Theft Auto games and people saying that Bigfoot was hidden inside of the game somewhere, apparently he's actually in Grand Theft Auto 5.
I saw that too. Yeah, that's pretty great.
Yeah, and one of the ways, so somebody discovered it by going through like the PC version and figuring out that there's actually a character model for it. But apparently, I've never done this, but there's a function in the game where you go and you find peyote and you take peyote and it lets you play as an animal.
You haven't done that yet.
No, I haven't done that.
Oh man, I've only done the one where you become a dove.
And
you crap on cars and people.
Yeah. So if you go, and there's an article on, where is this, Eurogamer.net, Grand Theft Auto 5's playable Bigfoot Easter egg discovered, and they actually like give you the coordinates that you need to go to turn into a Sasquatch and run around. But, I mean, I remember, I think it was like Grand Theft Auto 3, where it was like, oh, yeah, totally, there's Bigfoot, I saw it. It's in the game.
I want to even think like Red Dead Redemption had something like
that. It might have, yeah. Yeah, I think that's funny. So they finally just like put it in the game. So
great. Yep. Well done, Rockstar.
That's all the news.
All right, let us wrap up with some questions. Our first question is for David, who is not with us this evening. So Casey Bates, we will.
We can't answer David's question.
Well, I don't think we can.
Okay.
Because the question is, after listening to the last show, it seems as though David has the same temperament and patience I have for games. Could I get some recommendations of his favorites? And I don't know.
David loves the new My Little Pony game that's coming out. He's totally a brony.
Yeah, that is accurate.
Barbie Adventure.
We've been covering... All right. It's time to come clean. All of the times that David has been in the Himalayas, he's been going, he's following the brony conferences around, like a kind of like a Grateful Dead style, getting in a VW microbus and going from brony conference to brony conference.
Yeah. Also, I can say with some degree of confidence that he would tell you that any of the Hitsune Miku games are fantastic. I mean, I think they're trash, but. He would enjoy those.
He loves Konami Pachinko too. He's huge into that.
Jerry Esposito asks us, have you seen or played the Street Fighter V beta? If so, what do you think? I have not played it. I have seen it played. And I'm not, as I've said a number of times before, I'm not really a fighting game kind of guy. What I've seen of it, though, I thought that looked really cool. That looks like a really good fighting game that I will probably buy on Steam real cheap one day and never play.
And then play it for a couple of nights and then not do it. Yeah, just like it's well established. I mean, I even had that article, I think, last episode where fighting games are fascinating to me, but I am fucking terrible at them. So I have not tried the Street Fighter beta, nor have I seen it. So, but I've had, like, I've heard a lot of good things about it from, there's a, what's the A Striker, Jason A Striker on John.
He's
like a huge fighting game dude. And he has written a few articles and kind of goes into a lot of that stuff on that site. If you're looking for, and apparently it likes the, you know, has numerous Street Fighter sticks and things like that. So he's really big into it. So go over to Giant Bomb, and look up anything written by Jason A. Striker, because he's kind of a fun, his excitement for fighting games is fun to listen to when he talks about them.
What about you, McFerrin?
Hadn't seen a thing about it.
Mm. All right, you're worthless to us at this point.
Big F in the fighting games.
Yeah. That, like, unfortunately, David is not here, and he's kind of our fighting game guy. I think the art style looks very Street Fighter 2, but polished in a way that makes it feel relevant and look real clean. Even though you're not using sprites anymore, it feels kind of like that in a way. It's cool. If I had any interest in fighting games, I think I would feel like there was an embarrassment of riches at this point with, MK10. Looks real good, and Street Fighter V seems real cool as well.
I'll actually watch Mortal Kombat streams on Twitch sometimes, like if I'm going to bed and I'm sitting there and I can't sleep, and I'll fire up an MK stream on my phone because it's just fun to watch.
Yeah, it, you know, that, again, another game that once it's super cheap on Steam, I'll pick it up and then just suck at in a way that creates some sort of vacuum of gaming. All right, John Rhodes asks us, what would be your ideal horror game? Let's start with you, Justin. What would be your ideal horror game?
A rough one. I have the whatever that one alien game is called. I can't remember.
Isolation, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, for the longest time I wanted an Aliens game that was very much like that, and haven't finished that game because it's so scary. Like, I'm kind of like Bo, where like these horror games, like I get into them and like they just really get to me, and I kind of have to put them down, and it's I need to go back and finish that one, but it just puts me on the edge of my seat so much that it stresses me out kind of. I've been a long time fan of Silent Hill games, I would say, just to throw it out there, really wished that Silent Hills could have survived and come to fruition. It seemed like that was going to be really awesome.
Yeah,
there was some news going around over the past couple of days that one of Japan's best manga artists was actually going to do a lot of the artwork for that game as well. Like, that game had so many big names thrown into the pot and so much potential. In a weird way, I'm almost kind of glad that it didn't happen, because I think that the hype would have been too big for what that game would have ultimately been.
There is that one that's copying the just kind of the PC
Allison clone. Road. Allison Road,
yeah. That's, yeah. I read another article about that again. That's like kind of hyping it up. Like, this is going to be something pretty sweet. So that's definitely, if you're into that Silent Hill style. Allison Road looks like it's going to try to fill that gap. So,
what about you, John? Your best horror game?
So I'm not like the biggest horror genre fan. Like, I mean, I love Friday the 13th and all, you know, the bigs. And one of my all-time favorite horror movies is Poltergeist. But shit that scares me is like apocalyptic kind of downer movies, like I don't think you're a big fan of this one, Bo, but I really like the movie Children of Men, and I think it was just like the dystopian nature of it all, and like I really like when games, they're not like hard to play, but like semi-depressing in a way. Like there were parts of the Mass Effect series that kind of hit me that way, where it was the circumstances and the possible and maybe probable outcome of these circumstances is really dreadful and kind of horrific. So I think I like horror on kind of more of a like societal scale than, you know, like a Silent Hills where, wow, this is fucked up and weird and there's some zombies coming after me, or, you know, like a Left 4 Dead kind of a horror where it's, you know, bloodbath horror, things like that. I kind of like it more when it's like, if this shit goes down, everybody's fucked, you know, like.
So like a game based on the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie End of Days,
basically. Kind of.
I feel like that's the game that we're all really looking for.
I like, Fallout does it somewhat for me, but it's funny to say this, but Fallout's almost a little too whimsical for my tastes.
Yeah.
It is a jaunty sort of romp down the apocalypse, sure.
Like, I don't know, I can't think of a really great example of exactly what I'm looking for, but I like...
Maybe like a Telltale game?
Kind of, yeah. Like, some of the decisions in that were good, but, you know, more video gamey than that. Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't like jump scares because they don't scare me. I like, uncomfortable shit. Like, you know, the Children of Men example where...
Eraserhead the game.
Yeah, but, like, there's a scene in this is kind of the thing of what I'm getting at, I think, is there's a scene in Children of Men where... they're on the bus and they're trying to get the pregnant lady out of the city. And there's a kind of a group of them still together. And some of their group have been killed trying to get out. And it's just getting more and more dire. And it's like, Jesus Christ, we're not going to make it. And all these guards get on the bus and they're about to find this woman who's pregnant. And she's like the only known woman on the planet who's pregnant because, you know, people have stopped having children for years. And, you know, the population of Earth is slowly dying out. And she's, you know... like this total blessing, like, oh my God, we can still, you know, people can still get pregnant. And these guards come on the bus and they're about to discover her, and one of the people in the group like stands up and starts acting crazy in front of the guards so that they will be distracted by her and not find out that this woman is pregnant and possibly lead down this horrible, you know, set of circumstances. And they haul her off the bus. And the bus starts driving away, and as it's driving away, there's just this camera pan over to the side, and you see her getting fucking black hooded and shoved down on the ground as the bus drives away, and that's the last time you fucking see her, and you're just like, oh, fuck, man. I feel really bad right now.
Yeah, so if that's... Telltale did their version of The Road.
Yes, yeah. The Road is a great example. Give me something that's just... fucking, like, this is the worst shit you could ever have happen to you. You know, that's scary to me. That's the kind of stuff that I like in a horror setting.
Yeah, I'm a bit more Lovecraftian in my tastes. I wish there were a video game that was the equivalent of the Lovecraft story, The Shadow Over Innsmouth. Strangely, I wasn't thinking about it when I mentioned it earlier, but something like I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, I think is a really good horror game. I think, you know, I do like, even playing through a little bit of Soma, even though I haven't played much at all, you know, that has created an atmosphere that I find really tense. I haven't run into a jump scare yet, but... you know, there's probably going to be some of that in there, but I do like a sense of, you know, to me, there's nothing scarier than the idea of helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, it's tough to do in a video game because most video games are all about empowering the player as opposed to disempowering them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting when a game kind of goes for that. So, yeah, I mean, I think I think good horror is largely story-driven.
Yeah.
That's why I think something like Walking Dead Season 1 from Telltale is really, really good.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it tells a really emotional story, and I think you have to have... You know, I think there's a difference between horror and terror.
Yeah.
I think terror is, you know, being chased, and horror is kind of what... you know, you're describing, John, of like this kind of more existential sort of
living with it.
Yeah. of like there is a bleakness and hopelessness to the situation that is tough to generate in a game because, you know, I mean, that's why the Oculus is kind of great with stuff like that is because you can't look away. You know, most of the horror games have been kind of jump scare based games, but I think eventually you're going to get that, you know, System Shock 2 kind of game. That is just this overwhelmingly bleak experience that is going to be, you know, kind of all-encompassing and really good.
For me, like, the end of Mass Effect series is the fucking Reapers, like, destroy the fucking planet and, like, enslave everybody. Like, that's what I'm looking for. Not we won the day and beat the aliens. Like, I want this shit to go bad. I want to feel bad after I play it, and I want to just, like... Because that's nobody does that in a game like that. It's always, oh, the good guys won, yay. You know, Luke Skywalker blew up the Death Star. No. The entire fucking galaxy was enslaved by Darth Vader. I'm sorry.
Right, but how, at this point, how could you ever get away with that? If you're making a big AAA game.
I know.
Like, people bitched all kinds of ways about Mass Effect 3's ending because they didn't feel they had enough agency in it.
Yeah.
If you just shut that shit down and was like, doesn't matter what you did for three games.
Yeah, but that's, I mean... There's a way to do that where it does matter what you did, but the outcome is still not fucking Hollywood ending. You know, I'm so tired of the Hollywood ending, I think is what I'm getting at. I'm just looking for, and like I said earlier, DayZ had kind of a, this is not your typical feeling in a game. Like it was, you know, it was one of the first games where I was like, God, I really don't want to fucking die.
Yeah.
You know, and like actually, causes your body to have a physical reaction while you're playing that game because you like your heart. Oh shit! There's a fucking guy shooting at. Well, you know, like, what am I gonna do? What do I gotta do? I gotta run. I gotta run. I gotta get over here. I gotta hide. I gotta. If I do that, is he gonna see where I went? Do I gotta? Can I run now? Do I gotta wait? Is it better if I wait? I mean, all that shit's going through your head. That's scary to me. Not, you know, something jumps out of a closet or, you know, dude gets chopped in half in front of me. Like, it's survival.
Yeah. All right, well, that's all our questions for the Shotcast this week. Thanks, as always, for sending those in, and you can shoot those over to us on the Facebook page, or if you want to email the questions over, that is sdfgaming@sdfgaming.com. And we will wrap this up with just a quick around the horn here. Justin, what you looking forward to playing between now and the next time we talk? And God is my witness, if either of you... say Metal Gear Solid 5. Let's just assume that's understood. You're going to be playing that game. What else, for the love of God and all that's holy, would you be playing?
Can I say Squad? Because Squad. The servers just went 24/7. It used to be weekends only. Now it's 24/7. I'll be playing more and more of that. As a result of this podcast, I think I might slot some time for Alien Isolation.
I own that and I've never cracked it open. That's something I got to do.
I didn't even bullshit myself about that one. Even when it was on sale, I was like, I'm not, that game seems like something that would terrify me. And
The 4 hours that I've played are terrifying. So
yeah. And as the one of us that has actually written a horror movie, I'm the least likely to play a horror game, which is ironic.
That's pretty good. I am going to play some more Mad Max because I'm, after seeing Fury Road, kind of hooked on that whole tone and feeling that game does. And I think it does a good job of wasteland style. It's, you know, it's got a lot of gamey mechanics in it, but I'm having a really good time with it, and it's gorgeous. And I like slamming my rusty Corvette into other cars and watching them explode. The fire effects in that game are so goddamn good. I hit a car and blew it up. I think it was last night I was playing it, and the explosion, the way that it spread out, and there was like fire burning on the sand. It looked like, if you've ever seen gasoline like on dirt or something like that burning, there's like a look to it where it doesn't look like it has a fuel source, and yet it's still burning, and that it just looks so good in that game. So I'm psyched to get back into that universe. Mad Max, love it.
And I will be continuing my journey into Soma. and as well as you know, continuing on with Witcher 3. All of this is just, you know, twiddling my thumbs video game wise because I don't want to launch into anything big prior to Fallout 4.
Yeah, that's close. Was it like November 11th?
Yeah. We're about
month and change.
Yeah, I mean, we're about 6 weeks away from that thing dropping. Yeah. So, you know, Witcher 3 is going to occupy me for sure. Soma, you know, it's about a 10-hour game. I really expect to have that done in about a week or so. Mm. And unless I get too scared.
Yeah. Oh, I'm also going to try some Metal Gear Solid 5 because that shit's tight.
Oh, God. Damn it. I get it. I do. It's just, when we started talking about doing a podcast 212 episodes ago, I just never expected this much talk about Metal Gear.
And there's been like 75 episodes that were dedicated.
Yeah.
There were just like 4 hours of Metal Gear talk. Like the spoiler cast that we did at episode 675. I mean, what was that, 10 hours long?
Yeah, well, and honestly, that podcast exists entirely in the time between the seconds, so it literally takes no time to listen to it, even though it takes like 10 hours.
You will be 10 hours older when you're done, but it only takes a second to listen to it.
Yeah,
it's some fucked up shit. It's weird.
It's a technology that you, as the listener, have not yet seen.
Yeah. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Now we're leading the way here at the Shotcast, so...
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that's going to do it for this episode 212. We will be back in a fortnight-ish to discuss another round of video games. Check out sdfgaming.com, and you can see links to Facebook and Twitter and, you know, Tinder. I don't know where. Everywhere. Swipe right on SDF Gaming.
Swipe right on the Shotcast.
And, yeah, and we'll see you then. Until then, have fun, everybody.
Later.
Good night.
Bye.
Yeah.
Cool. You stayed your 2.5 hours.
You've listened your 2.5 hours.
Fucking goal.
Go. Go.